is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Monday afternoon at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones here in our One Buffalo studio on the day after the Bills, the Bills' surprising win in Kansas City against the Kansas City Chiefs. John Murphy, Donald Jones here to talk about the game with you. You are welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-552-550. We didn't do a show last Thursday and Friday, Donald, because of the holiday, but I'll confess, had we done a show, I would have expressed concern for the Bills' chances going to KC. I was surprised they won, right?
I mean, would have as well. It didn't matter. It didn't matter, you know, the fact that the Chiefs hadn't been playing well for the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. That didn't really matter. All I would have looked at was they have some playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, and they have a good enough defense to get it done. You know, it's hard to stop a Travis Kelce. That dude is good. It's hard to stop Tariq Hill, Kareem Hunt, all of them together, Charkandrick West, all of those guys together, and Alex Smith, who had been playing like an MVP type of quarterback early in the season.
Yeah,
you know, and then when you look at how the Bills had played the last 3 weeks, it would have been hard for me to say, you know what, the Bills are going to win this game. But they played well yesterday. They did. They surprised me.
They played well, and they had a good plan, especially on defense, I thought.
Right.
And that obviously was the difference when you only give up 10 points and all those weapons you talked about. Clearly, on the other side, the Kansas City Chiefs have a lot of issues on offense with all those playmakers. There's no way they should play that poorly.
Yeah,
but
when you have so many playmakers, you have to be able to get those guys the ball. And let me reframe what I said there, or rephrase what I said there. The defense played well the entire game. Now, they came out in the second half, you know, right in the second half when Kansas City got the ball. They let Kansas City drive down the field and score a touchdown. But for the most part, they did a good job shutting down everyone. The offensive side of the ball is another question, especially in the second half.
Yeah. But let's talk for a second about the Buffalo defense and the plan they had. I think it was really important that the Bills did a couple of things. Shut down all those playmakers you talked about. But they also, I thought, did a great job of putting pressure on Alex Smith all day long. And we talked about this. They weren't getting a lot of pressure. You know, we're saying they got to dial up more blitzes. They didn't really, as it turns out, dial up blitzes. But I think they had a creative third down package in particular where they lined up Lorenzo Alexander inside over the one of the interior offensive linemen. Sometimes he dropped out. Sometimes he rushed the passer. What it did, I thought, was confuse Alex Smith. The veteran, like Alex Smith, confused him to the point where they looked lost, Kansas City did, especially on third downs. I mean, they were miserable. What are they, 2 of 13 on third downs? They didn't get their first down until 3 minutes to go in the first half. They had no third down conversions in the first half. And I give a lot of credit to the Buffalo defensive scheme and the coaches for coming up with that game plan, figuring out a way to shut down those weapons. And you pointed it out. Kelce never really hurt him.
No.
Combination of stuff with Kelce. I saw double teams. I saw other things they were doing against Kelce. A lot of contact at the line of scrimmage. Help me out. Number 10.
Tariq Hill.
Yeah, Tariq Hill. I knew his name yesterday. He didn't hurt him badly. He didn't hurt him badly. And the running back, I don't know if he's run out of gas or what.
Kareem Hunt, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that the Bills' defensive coaches deserve a big share of the credit for that game plan yesterday to shut them down. And coming coming where it did in the schedule, after, you know, three consecutive blowout losses with the Bills giving up an average, or losing by an average of, or no, giving up an average of 45 points per game. That was incredible to play that kind of defense yesterday.
I did not
see that coming.
You know, the biggest difference, yeah, you talk about the game plan, you talk about putting Lorenzo Alexander down there on the line of scrimmage, and we got a call last week, and it was like, man, how come we don't see Lorenzo down on the line of scrimmage anymore rushing the passer? And he hadn't been. He had been, you know, primarily playing linebacker and special teams. But to see him down on the line of scrimmage yesterday was refreshing.
Yeah.
To see him line up down there. And that's the beauty of having guys who are versatile. You know, guys who can go down there, put their hand in the dirt, rush the passer. That's the beauty of having a Lorenzo Alexander. Last year he went to the Pro Bowl because he was able to get so many sacks. So I think you have to use him on the line of scrimmage. You have to have him rushing the passer. You know, you want to line him up at linebacker, that's fine, you know. But he needs to put his hand in the dirt as well, and that will throw off a quarterback. I don't care who it is, when they see a guy, usually, oh, he's usually a linebacker, and then all of a sudden he has his hand in the dirt, and you have Milano in there or somebody else, it can throw a quarterback off, you know. So, yeah, I think we need to see a lot more of that from Lorenzo Alexander. But for me, the biggest thing yesterday, which we hadn't seen over the last 3 weeks, was you had a defense that was swarming to the ball. You had a defense that was playing on the other side of the field, especially against the run. These guys were all getting to the ball. They were gang tackling. We hadn't seen that. They were tackling one-on-one in open space.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is they were tackling. We hadn't seen that in the last 3 weeks, and that was the biggest plus yesterday, to see them actually making sure tackles, not necessarily going for the strip every single time, just bringing guys to the ground. And it really was just back to fundamental football.
And it was a Buffalo win fueled by the defense, which is what we became accustomed to when the Bills jumped out to that 5-2 record, right, at the start of the year. That was the template. Play strong defense. They did for the first, you know, 5-6 weeks of the year. Mm-hmm. Don't make mistakes offensively. They really didn't. They didn't do a whole lot offensively. One touchdown scored, and get big kicks from the kicker, Hauschka. That was the formula that took them to 5-2. That was the formula they returned to yesterday. And if they have a shot, and they do have a shot at finishing with a postseason berth, that's the formula, I believe, that will carry them there this year. Is it a sustainable formula for Super Bowl success down the future? Probably not. But, you know, just play it as it lies, I think, you know. See how far you get with this group, with this plan.
What's your identity, you know, as a team? What's your identity on offense? What's your identity on defense? Their identity is we play strong defense. Yeah, they got a lot of turnovers early in the season. That helped out. And they got a key turnover yesterday to seal the deal, you know. And it was good to see Tre'Davious White come up with that big play at the end of the game. That was a big-time play by him. But they didn't get a lot of turnovers. But what they did do was they shut down the run, which they hadn't been doing. They shut down the run, and they did a good job on those playmakers in the passing game, you know, and confusing Alex Smith. They did a good job of getting pressure on Alex Smith. It didn't result in sacks. They only had, what, 2 sacks or something like that yesterday? It doesn't result in a bunch of sacks, but it did get him off his mark. You know, it did get him rolling out, trying to make throws on the run. It did get him throwing the ball out of bounds, you know, just throwing the ball away because he has nowhere to go with that ball. That is their identity, you know. And on offense, they were able to run the ball a little bit more. They went over 100 yards rushing the ball. You got LeSean McCoy having more positive plays, you know, and that's what you want to see out of this team. They still need to solve some issues on offense, especially in the red zone, and we're going to talk about that. But I think that is their identity. Play strong defense. On offense, they need to get out to a lead early.
Yeah,
this is not a team that will come back from behind down 2 touchdowns or something like that. They need to get out to an early lead and then just continue to play strong defense, get a couple of field goals. I don't know how long you want to live and die by those field goals, though. And that's what we're going to talk about.
Well, like I said, just play it out.
Take it,
you know, they don't have all the answers. They're missing a lot of answers when it comes to offense. But, you know, we know who they are now. I think we can say with certainty as you move into December soon, we know who they are. We know how they play when they win. And can that get them to the postseason? We'll find out. I mean, they're sitting there in the 6th seed in the AFC right now. And it's going to be an interesting last 5 games. I know that for sure. I look forward to these final 5 games. And the schedule is so odd to have 2 against the Patriots and 2 against the Dolphins in the final 5 games. That's unheard of, I think. I can't ever recall that. And to get 3 straight home games now.
Yeah.
Yes, the first one against the Patriots, but a chance to build up some momentum here. I like the way this sits right now for the Buffalo Bills, and really looking forward to the final 5 weeks with the remaining schedule. Patriots coming up this Sunday, and then the Colts come here, and then the Dolphins come here. So get 2 of those 3, and you need 1 more win in the final 2 at New England, at Miami. Certainly, I mean, you can envision, can't you, the Bills sweeping the Dolphins and getting a win against the Colts. I'm not saying it'll be easy. I'm not saying they're layups, but you can envision that, right?
Yeah, I can envision.
There's the 3 wins, and now you got 9, and one would think 9 might do it in the AFC.
I can envision them doing what they have to do in this game, coming down to them having to win the last game of the season down in Miami.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be, you would have a stadium full of Bills fans, and that would be fun, you know. But to have these 3 home games in December right now, meaningful games in Buffalo here at the end of the season, where a game against the Patriots actually means something, you know, a game against the Dolphins actually means something. A game against the Colts, which is not in this division, but it actually does mean something. Those 3 games here in Buffalo to set you up for the last 2 games of the season to possibly get back to the playoffs. I think this is a great part of the schedule. They've done a good job of setting themselves up for this part of the season. You really shouldn't. They put themselves in a tough spot, you know, losing some games that they really shouldn't have lost. You talk about the Jets. You talk about Los Angeles, the Chargers. But right now they are set up to where they can put themselves in the playoffs. They just have to handle business at home. And that has been their thing all year.
Yeah.
You know, they lost a game at home. They got blown out at home. But their biggest thing is you got to defend your dirt. And you had three home games in December to set yourselves up to get into the playoffs.
It's going to be fun. We know that. We hope today's show is going to be fun. We have a pretty good lineup for you. We're going to talk with you a lot in this first hour. We'll go back over the highlights from yesterday's game. We'll hear from some of the locker room, but we also want to engage with you. And the phone lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We also have Sean McDermott's Monday news conference coming up live. We'll carry it for you live at 1 o'clock today. And at 2 o'clock, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com will be joining us here in studio as we break down the Bills and the Chiefs, and your input is critical. Let's hear from you on the phone lines or via Twitter. Our Twitter poll today deals with yesterday's win over the Kansas City Chiefs. Pretty basic. What was the key to the Bills' victory over the Chiefs on Sunday? That's the Twitter poll that we start with today. What was the key to the Buffalo win over Kansas City Sunday? Right now, 55% of you say handcuffing Kansas City's playmakers was the number one key. 54% say handling those playmakers, Travis Kelce and the rest of them. 54%, just over half of you say that was the key. 21% say pressuring Alex Smith was the key factor in yesterday's game. 16% say an early 10-point lead was the key. 9% say something else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. What do you think was the key to the Bills' victory over the Chiefs? I think it was pressuring Alex Smith with that third down package we talked about. We'll talk more about that as the afternoon rolls along with, just making him uncomfortable. Only the two sacks, as you point out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he never looked settled. He looks like he's in trouble, by the way.
Alex Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
he
never got settled because the Bills had a variety of different looks to give him, pressure on him, and that's how they won those games early. You know, if you go back, all of the takeaways when the Bills had that incredible takeaway string early in the season, almost all of them were generated by pressure.
Yeah.
And they got some pressure yesterday in different ways.
And most turnovers are generated by pressure. When you're talking about interceptions, those usually are generated by pressure. A quarterback has to get it out fast because you have a blitz coming and he doesn't see someone else dropping out or he throws off the mark or something like that. And that's what happened yesterday. They didn't get a lot of turnovers. Like we said, they didn't get a lot of sacks. What they did get was they got consistent pressure on Alex Smith and they got a key turnover at the end of the game when – you know, the quarterback for their team who has been playing like an MVP caliber quarterback, at least early in the season, had a chance because your offense, which is something else we're going to talk about, when your offense had a chance, the Bills' offense had a chance to seal the deal in the fourth quarter. They didn't. They gave the ball back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now your defense had to come up big again and with the key stop versus Alex Smith and all those playmakers, and you get a key turnover. At that part of the game, it was generated by the pressure, and that is what they need to do. They need to get pressure on the quarterbacks.
You know, there's an interesting tweet here from Douglas Briggs who says, our offseason additions truly shine this game. They made many plays. That thought occurred. I was waiting to go in the locker room after the game yesterday, just kind of scribbling some notes out, you know, who to talk to, who to ask what, and I realized all the guys I really wanted to and needed to talk to
weren't here last year.
Yeah, they're new guys, right? Tre'Davious White, pretty obviously, but Eddie Yarbrough got the start. He made some plays, some of that pressure we talked about. Zay Jones caught the touchdown pass and caught a couple of others. There were others, you know. Matt Milano played a role in that game yesterday. Virtually,
Deion Dawkins played well.
Deion Dawkins played pretty well.
Yeah.
It's rookies and guys, and Hauschka, obviously not a rookie, but a first-year Buffalo player. They were the key players in yesterday's
Gaines.
Game. Gaines, outstanding.
Yeah, making tackles.
Tackling.
You know, Leonard Johnson, all of these guys. Yeah, all of these guys are key contributors to the success the success that they had yesterday and, you know, the success that they've had this year, you know, and some of the losses. You had these guys have been key contributors to that. It's just crazy to see how many new faces are on this team and actually out there playing. And not just new faces like free agents, but rookies out there playing, starting the game. You know, it's amazing to see something like that. You have Poirier, Micah Hyde, all of these guys on the back end of the defense. It's pretty funny to me.
It's amazing. What do you think was the key to the Bills' victory? Oh, and the other thing about that, and I think of this because of a discussion I had before the game with Bill Polian. He was there doing national radio, and he was kind of counseling patience. Be patient. This Bills team will come around. It's the first year. Well, when you look at all those playmakers being first-year players here, and you obviously the playoff pushes on, you want to make the playoffs, but you also, I think, have to take a step back and think about what they're trying to build here. And laying a foundation with all these young players who are out there making plays is a pretty good sign.
It is a pretty good sign. And there's another name, and this name didn't come in the offseason. He came a couple weeks ago, and that's Tavares Cadet.
Yeah.
You know, and I like the way this kid is playing. For me, it will be hard. And you talk about the future. It will be hard to go back to Mike Tolbert right now as the number two running back. He is just playing too well. He gives you that burst. He gives you that, you know, that good compliment to LeSean McCoy. He runs hard. He can run inside. He can run outside. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. For me, he is your number two running back.
Me too.
And he's another one of those key contributors that wasn't here last year, wasn't even here last month. You know, he's a new guy on this team. But he is playing well for this team. And, you know, I would love to see him around. If he continues to play well, I would love to see him around for the future of this franchise.
All right, what do you think? What was the key to the Bills' victory over the Chiefs? Obviously, there's more than one, but maybe you can isolate it down to one if you want to vote on a Twitter poll, or better to give us a phone call and talk about it. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. The key to Buffalo's victory over the Chiefs, what do you think it was? Let's discuss. Before we get to phones, though, let's take a look and a listen back to some of the highlights of the game. Time for Game Rewind, presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills.
Tyrod looks left, rolls out, sets up, fires down into the end zone. It is caught for the touchdown. Zay Jones, touchdown Buffalo. An 11-yard toss from Tyrod Taylor to Zay Jones. The snap. Tyrod looks left, fires left, caught in stride by Zay Jones, breaks the tackle, and he's finally ankle tackled down at the 24-yard line. First down, Buffalo. His snap is down. Hauschka's kick is up. It is good. And the Bills lead it now by a score of 10-0. So with the wind at his back, he just missed a 52-yarder. This is 56 yards from the right hash. Steven Hauschka, the snap. His kick is on the way. This one's long enough, and this one is good. He buries it from 56 yards out. Start a new streak for Steven Hauschka. Kansas City threatening now. First down to the Buffalo 19-yard line. Alex Smith in the shotgun. Takes the snap. Fakes the handoff. Swings it out left side. And it is caught by Albert Wilson. Wilson beats the tackle. Gets inside the five and into the end zone for the touchdown. Tyrod under center. Back to throw off play action. Looks. He's got Clay wide open. Lofts it to him. And he makes the catch at the 45-yard line. Charles Clay gets into Kansas City territory. A flag goes down. And Clay spins out of bounds at the Kansas City 42-yard line. This one 49 yards. Now into the wind, it would seem. Here's the snap. Hauschka's kick is on the way. It is up. And it is good. Boy, oh boy. Talk about Hausch money. He did it again. A 49-yarder for Steven Hauschka. In the shotgun, the snap to Alex Smith. Looks right. Fired. It is picked off. It is intercepted. Going back the other way. It is Tre'Davious White at the 35. And he's still on the run inside the 25. Cuts to his right at the 15. At the 10. He is down at the 10-yard line. Tre'Davious Tre'Davious White. Unbelievable.
There you go. Game Rewind presented by Toshiba Business Solution. Listen back and look back at some of the great highlights from yesterday's game. All right, what are your highlights? Who are the key factors? Who are the key players, rather? What were the key factors in Buffalo's win over the Kansas City Chiefs? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lines are open. We'll start with Jerry in Tonawanda. Go ahead, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Hey, a couple points. One, I think Alexander – you know, we weren't listening much in the last couple of games, and I think against Brady, we're going to need him to do that again. And I think he's just better at blitzing than he is coverage. And second, Tre'Davious White, I don't know if you know this, his nickname Shaq. I don't know if you know how he got it, but his father was 6'10". That's why they called him Baby Shaq growing up. And then he got the nickname Shaq when you're at LSU.
How do you know that, Jerry?
I have friends in Shreveport, and I have friends that are really good friends with Shaq's mother.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
All the time. And also, Shaq, I don't know if you knew this, but when he was at LSU, he was one of the top punt returners in the country. Right. And I'd like to see him put Shaq back at punt returns instead of Tate and see what that does. And
I wouldn't. I think Tate did a pretty nice job again yesterday. I think he averaged 10 yards per punt return. He muffed the one but managed to cover up. I don't want to overload Tre'Davious White either, but make that switch.
I would like everybody, I don't know, I'm sure everybody in the building calls him Shaq. I mean, everybody in Shreveport and LSU calls him Shaq when he goes home and stuff. That's just his nickname.
You think everybody in this building calls him Shaq?
I don't know if anybody knows that in this building. I don't. I've never heard that before.
I mean, talk to Tre'Davious White. Tell him, tell him, hey, I heard you got your nickname Shaq. He'll tell you.
Okay, thanks, Jerry. We'll look into that. I hear people calling him Trey and Trey Day in the building.
Yeah, I never heard Shaq.
No. His point on Lorenzo is valid, Jerry and Tonawanda. And as we said, I think that is what Lorenzo does best. And they found a way to do it, I think. It wasn't just a pure blitz scheme for Lorenzo Alexander. He would line up over the guard or one of the tackles or one of the guards or the center, and he would drop into coverage. He would blitz sometimes. And it was more the illusion of pressure that created issues than it was the actual pressure, I thought. I thought it was a very good scheme and well executed by Lorenzo Alexander.
I just think that's where he's best. You know, putting him in coverage, and this is not a knock against Lorenzo or anything like that. Lorenzo can do everything. But I think he likes to rush the passer. I do. I think he likes to rush the passer. I think he likes to be in the backfield, make tackles in the backfield, make tackles on the quarterbacks in the backfield, the running backs in the backfield. I don't know how much he likes. I'm sure he's going to do what they ask him to do, but I think he likes to rush the passer. You just see a different player when he has his hand in the dirt rushing the passer.
And what if I told you, and I'm just looking this up, Lorenzo only played 20 defensive snaps yesterday, 34% of the snaps.
I wonder what percentage he was actually rushing the passer.
And he played actually 22 special team snaps. I think he got more bang for his buck out of those 22 snaps than just about – or 20 snaps just about anybody on defense. Right?
Yeah, because Lorenzo was playing like 70 – early in the season, he was playing like 70 on defense and on special teams. Lorenzo is – he's not a young spring chicken, so you need to make sure that he's getting the proper rest so that when he's in there, he's going to give you everything he has, And I think that's what they did yesterday. Maybe that's a new formula for Lorenzo moving forward where he plays his special teams because he's so good on special teams, and then you have him rushing the passer, but he's not playing every single snap on defense.
Does the same scheme work against the Patriots?
That's always a question.
There's nobody. Look, of all – and Belichick is not a favorite here, but the one thing you have to say about him is he knows how to change up game to game.
Oh, yeah.
They'll do something different every game.
Something you haven't seen.
Yep.
Something you have not seen yet.
And defense.
Yep. They will do some crazy things. I remember my time up there, those guys, they changed their entire system basically every week. And you have to be dialed in so that you don't miss anything. It is amazing what they do. And they're going to do something different to Tyrod Taylor this week.
Yep.
They're going to look back at the film that, the Saints, the Jets, the Chargers, the Saints and the Jets and teams before that, what they were doing, they're going to do something like that, mix it up against Tyrod Taylor. And then on offense, they're going to do something that the Bills haven't seen yet.
Yep. What's the biggest factor in Buffalo's win over Kansas City? Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Rick calling from a car. Go ahead, Rick. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Okay.
Good. You guys touched base a little bit on it, and I just wanted to, jump on it as well. I got to admit, the players that the coaches have brought in have been some really studs. I'm not saying they're the best players in the league or anything, but they're hustlers. They're go from start to finish, and when the coach talks about character and following this foundation he's trying to build, I have a business locally and I build that same kind of foundation in that. I think it's awesome. I'm pumped for the coach, and I'm just really excited to see those new guys. EJ Gaines, come on now, the guy's 5-2 when he's in the starting lineup.
Yeah, you're right. When EJ Gaines is in the lineup and he's healthy, he does make a big difference on the defensive side of the ball. He's making tackles, and that was one of the reasons they brought him over here. They brought him over here in a trade. Yeah, he does what he needs to do in coverage, but he's also a tackling corner, sure tackling corner. The one play where it was like a wide receiver screen and he fought Travis Kelce yesterday and made that tackle, that was like textbook right there, how you really fight through a block and make a tackle on a wide receiver on a screen play like that. I like what E.J. Gaines does. I just hope that he can stay healthy for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, because he does make a difference. He is a difference maker. He had 8 total tackles in that game yesterday, and he's involved in really one of the troubling plays of the game that almost costs the Bills the game. The terrible, terrible call along the near sideline by the down judge, Phil McKinley, who's a former player in the league and should know better. I know you got to protect players, but that wasn't even close to being unsportsmanlike conduct.
No.
It wasn't a high hit, wasn't a late hit, it wasn't out of bounds.
He didn't even
contact the guy. I mean, that's a 15-yard penalty in a crucial situation of the game. You better be darn sure that you saw that penalty. When you watch the game, you can almost see down judge Phil McKinley, his officiating teammates, trying to talk him out of it.
Man,
are you sure? Are you sure? Because there was no contact there. That was huge. That could have cost the Bills the game. What a terrible call. I would go back to my standard line at this point. The weakest link in the NFL is the officiating, and it's pretty consistently bad on a regular basis.
Yeah, that was a horrible call. That might have been one of the worst calls I've ever seen. You know, and the fact that the officials actually huddled and then came out and still made that call was like, are you serious right now? Are you guys are you really calling that? And they showed it on TV, the replay, so many times from so many different angles. I seen tweets from national reporters, and everybody was saying, did they really call that?
Terrible
that
call.
Is one of the worst calls ever. And it could have cost the Bills a game. You know, I mean, they came up with a big play, and they ended up winning the game. But I bet you if the Chiefs would have won that game, I mean, you'd be hearing a lot about that call.
We'd be flipping out about
yes.
it right now. Phil McKinley is the gentleman's name. He is a down judge. Phil McKinley. I don't have his address.
Does he have a Twitter? Everybody tweet him.
What do you think? What were the big factors in Buffalo's win yesterday? Dave calling from Rochester. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering, you saw the game firsthand. It just never seemed like Kansas City had their head into it. Almost like they were looking towards their next game, as bad as Buffalo has been playing. Do you think that could have been something in Kansas City's demise of this game, or do you think Buffalo just overplayed themselves and got, you know, they seemed like they were playing for their lives, Buffalo and Kansas
City
were like making reservations for dinner.
Dave, it's a good point. You know, and I said going in, again, we didn't do enough shows last week, but I know by the end of the week, I said to Kelso, the two desperate teams here, you would think, going in, right? Both needing to win badly. One of them played desperation football. The other did not. I think you're onto something there. And I do give the Bills credit for jumping on them when they saw that, you know, Kansas City's offense was so out of sync and so out of whack. The Bills, you know, got up. It took them a little bit, but they got up to a 10-0 lead, and they never trailed after that. I think that was huge.
Yeah, that was huge. That 10-point lead was definitely huge. If Kansas City had gotten out to a 10-point lead, we'd probably be talking about a different game.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the Bills' offense is built to truly score points at will. Whenever they need to, you know, we can score a point. I don't know if they have that type of playmaker on offense, especially at the wide receiver position. You know, I mean, anybody can make a play at any point, but I don't know if they have that guy at the receiver position where, all right, we need you to make a play right now. Go make a play. And that guy does that for them, you know. So this is an offense that – and the design of the offense is an offense that you drive the ball down the field, drive the ball down the field, drive the ball down the field. They need to get better in red zone efficiency. They weren't good yesterday, and they weren't good in the second half, but they did get out to that 10-point lead, and that cushion was enough for them to just, you know, continue to ride that, kick a couple of field goals, you end up winning the game.
Kansas City never got – what are they looking forward to? They're going back to the Meadowlands to play the Jets next week.
I mean,
it's not like it was a trap game. Clearly Kansas City's out of whack and in danger of dropping out, certainly out of contention for the division title and maybe even for a playoff spot.
I tell you, the team that the Bills played last week is a team that might win that division. And I think we would want them to win that division, the Chargers.
Absolutely you want them.
And I watched them play on Thanksgiving. And that is a team that is playing like they want to be there. Anthony Lynn has that team playing like they want to be in the playoffs. They want to win that division. And to be honest with you, with the way the Chiefs are playing right now, when you look at Denver out of it, and you look at, you know, Oakland, you know, Oakland is right there. But that Chargers team, I think, is the most dangerous team in that division right now. And they're playing like it.
And the Bills obviously would root for the Chargers to win that division because they have head-to-head advantages over Oakland, whom Buffalo beat, Kansas City, who Buffalo beat, and Denver. I mean, Denver's not even in the picture right now. So, yeah, keep an eye on the Los Angeles Chargers. Hey, we're going to talk more about what you thought of yesterday's game and take some more phone calls. One news note from the Bills today, they have added a cornerback to the practice squad. Cornerback Lorenzo Doss, D-O-S-S, signed to the Bills practice squad. They release offensive lineman Will Perciak. Doss was just cut by the Denver Broncos last Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, and he went on Twitter after he was released by Denver to blast GM John Elway and personnel director Matt Russell. His tweet said, "I'm disappointed. This is last Thursday. I'm disappointed in Matt Russell and Elway for putting out fake news about me. I've never had a problem or have been a problem in the locker room." Apparently, when he was released last Thursday, Vance Joseph wouldn't talk about it, said we're just trying to get better as a football team. But one report said that Doss was cut because he was late to a meeting last week. And Doss apparently felt like it was fake news put out by John Elway in the personnel department there. At any rate, Doss is here now on the Buffalo Bills practice spot, cornerback Lorenzo Doss.
Yeah, cut on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, how about
that's
that?
That's like getting fired on your day off.
Yeah.
That's pretty tough.
It is pretty tough. I never thought of that. Hey, Bills fans, time to vote for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. It is sponsored by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. Voting is open. We'll continue until tomorrow. Your nominees, LeSean McCoy, Bills running back for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Trey White with the big interception to seal the game yesterday. Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, or Stephen Hauschka with the long-range kicks. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week voting is open right now. We'll take your phone calls and we'll go through what we liked and what we didn't like about yesterday's game when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
In the shotgun, the snap to Alex Smith. Looks right. Fires. It is picked off. It is intercepted. Going back the other way. It is Tre'Davious White at the 35. And he's still on the run inside the 25. Cuts to his right at the 15. At the 10. He is down at the 10-yard line. Tre'Davious Tre'Davious White. Unbelievable. There it is, the Hilbert College call of the game. At Hilbert College, the community, the feeling, and the values are different. See Hilbert College, see differently. Go to hilbert.edu/see different. Call of the game. Let's get your call of the game. What do you think went down there, and how did the Bills come up with the win? What were the important factors in the Buffalo Bills win? The phone line's open, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Joe calling in from Batavia. Go ahead, Joe, please.
I'm a big fan of Tyrod. He is, you know, he's just a great, great quarterback in my estimation. And I think that the thing about benching him last week was a wake-up call for the whole team. And I think that they came back and they said, well, wait a minute, hey, we got to start playing here. And I think that the players, Buffalo is getting a new type of player, people that want to play in Buffalo and are willing to get into any scheme and really give it their all.
Huh. Do you think, I don't know, that's one way to look at it, I guess. I don't know that it was a wake-up call to the whole team, though. I mean, they've had no problems moving players in and out of the lineup, Donald. John Miller, replaced by Vlad Dukas, and some people along the defensive front have been in and out of the lineup, including, you know, Adolphus Washington and Shaq Lawson did not start yesterday. I don't know if I interpret the Taylor benching as a wake-up call to the whole team, and I certainly don't think that was the intention.
No, I don't think that was the intention. The intention was our offense is not getting it done.
Yeah.
You know, and we're trying to do something to spark the offense. We know what Tyrod Taylor is. We know what this offense is with Tyrod Taylor in the offense as a quarterback, you know. Now, he played good yesterday in the first half. In the second half, they didn't. And we've kind of seen that all year from this offense. Mm-hmm. We've seen an offense that, you know, they can sometimes move the ball. Other times they can't. They can sometimes get into the red zone, but then they won't score in the red zone. You know, that's what we've seen from this offense. So I think, yeah, they've they've made a lot of moves. They've traded away guys. They've moved guys up and down, in and out of the lineup. If guys are not getting it done, then you'll be benched. You know, that's just what it is. And we'll start somebody else and see if that person can get it done. That whole, like, open-door policy, or that whole it's always going to be competition, we see it every week. You know, it's not something that they talk about every week, but I think that's what it is. You know, if you're not playing well, then you're not going to be a starter. Then we need to put somebody else in there to see if that guy can play well. And if he's not playing well, maybe we'll go back to you, or maybe we'll find somebody else out there on the streets.
Tyrod benching is going to be discussed a lot. It was this past couple of weeks, and will be however long this season continues. I watched the CBS broadcast of the game yesterday, and the sideline reporter, Jamie Erdahl, obviously they have a meeting with Coach McDermott Saturday night as the Bills arrive at the hotel. She said something that obviously McDermott said, which I never heard him say around here, something to the effect – you watch the game on TV, right? Mm-hmm. Something to the effect that McDermott claimed that he didn't want to be one of those rookie head coaches who is afraid to make a move to get better.
I heard her say that.
Yeah. I never heard Sean say that. I mean, his actions displayed that. But it goes back to, you know, we'll talk about the benching a lot. There's some weird theories about what went on with the benching. Even yesterday before the game, Chris Brown and I are standing on the sidelines, and an NFL Network reporter said to us, there's something else working here, right? Is something happened between Tyrod and the coaching staff? We're like, no. Not at all. But people are looking for weird explanations for what I think is pretty simple. You just said it. I think Coach McDermott wanted to get better, took a gamble, put the rookie in there. The gamble clearly did not work.
Right.
Witness the 5 first-half interceptions by Peterman. And, you know, he's kind of accepted it and walked away from it now. And, you know, there it is. But I don't think there's anything nefarious in it. And I don't think it was an attempt to send a wake-up call. I think it was simply a head coach unafraid to make a bold move. And that was, we talked about it even before, what a risky decision it was.
You know, I remember going back to before the season, in the preseason, and when he was first hired, and, you know, he was saying all the right things. And then, you know, we kept saying, you know, there's going to come a point where he's going to have to make tough decisions. And how does he make those decisions? And people wanted to know. I want to know if this guy's going to go forward on fourth down. I want to know if he's going to make these tough decisions. Well, he's made them all year.
Yeah.
You know, he's traded away guys. He's gone for it on fourth and one, you know, and on the goal line instead of just kicking a field goal. You go for it and you end up beating, I think that was Oakland. That was a big play in that game,
yeah.
You know. He is not afraid. Now he switched the quarterback, and now I'm going to switch him back. You know, he is not afraid to make certain decisions. And I think, you know, fans here in Western New York and the national reporters need to just understand that. He's not – there's no ulterior motive here behind the things that he's doing. He just wants his team to play well. And if you're not playing well, then we're going to find somebody else that can play well. You know, it's not because, you know, I had this secret beef with this guy. It's not because, well, he's a former, you know, he's a Doug Whaley guy. He has that Doug Whaley stench on him. None of that stuff matters. He just wants his team to play well. If you're not playing well, sorry, we got to put somebody else in there.
He tried it, didn't work, and now he's back to Tyrod Taylor. You would think that there was some measure of vindication for Taylor to get the win. He didn't play great yesterday, but to get the win out of it. In fact, that was one of the questions he was asked. Tyrod Taylor asked about that. Let's listen into what they were saying in the locker room. Time to go around the locker room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. Quarterback Tyrod Taylor was yesterday's game vindication after he was benched.
I just proud of the way the guys played today. Like I said, it wasn't the prettiest. Something I told the offense wasn't the prettiest, but for us to come get a win on the road with our backs against the wall, people not believing in us. I think Coach showed us something last night. Not that this matters, but I think it was like 17 out of 19 people didn't pick us to win this one. So we like those underdog feelings, so it was great to come get this win.
Head coach Sean McDermott, a difficult win in Kansas City.
This was not easy. I mean, to come in here and win against Kansas City and a well-coached football team, I'll give a lot of credit to Andy and his staff and their players. It's a good football team. And to go on the road like we have and face adversity like we have and to push through it like we did, like our players and coaches did, I thought was phenomenal.
Linebacker Preston Brown, the Buffalo defense, needed this victory.
It's great for your confidence. Anytime you give up a lot of yards rushing, a lot of weeks in a row, then you play the second leading rusher in the league, and then you don't have any yards. It makes you feel a lot better. So going into the next week, we know we got to go out there and try to get a great win. So we just got to keep this momentum going.
Cornerback Tre'Davious White on his game-saving interception.
Coach Bird, man, he put us in great positions to make plays. You know, we've been watching film on formations all week, and it was like three or four times I saw that formation. They ran that route, but he didn't throw it. So I knew in crunch time, Tim was his guy, and I knew he was going to try to go, so I just jumped it.
Safety Micah Hyde, the pressure up front, helped the back end of the defense.
Them boys up front were eating today. And give it to the guys in the back, you know, the back seven of disguising. You know, guys were moving around, making it hard on Alex to read our coverage. And then from there, guys were just making plays. It was awesome to see.
Wide receiver Zay Jones, it was critical for the Bills to go up 10 to nothing.
I think very significant. You know, we want to come out and play fast, you know, get ahead really quickly. We know what type of team Kansas City is, especially in this type of environment, so it's very important for us to get that early score.
Defensive lineman Kyle Williams on the nature of the Buffalo win.
There's ups and downs to the season. You know, we were obviously up against a mountain of adversity and had to correct a whole lot of things. And to come out and to do it, you know, I think is a good catalyst moving forward. The guys know that we can. You know, even over the first, you know, what, seven games, you know, played really well. But, you know, there's ebb and flow of the season. So, you know, able to recover, come back, and have a good game is always nice.
There you go, Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tyrod looks left, rolls out, sets up, fires down into the end zone. It is caught for the touchdown. Zay Jones, touchdown Buffalo. An 11-yard toss from Tyrod Taylor to Zay Jones. And that play, that touchdown play, our Hunt Real Estate red zone play. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all of your real estate needs. I don't know why they needed a replay review of that. I mean, it wasn't just a review of scoring play. It was like, oh, let's stop the game for a few minutes and look at it in New York. Why?
Yeah.
Feet down.
They should have replayed that call against E.J. Gaines.
Yeah.
That was bad. Go ahead and send that one up to New York so that they can call down and say,
What's going on there in Kansas City? Here's Mike in Pennsylvania. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. First off, I wanted to say happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys enjoyed it with your families.
We did. Yeah. I did. You did.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
We did.
Good. Very good.
Thanks.
Hey, the thing I wanted to say yesterday and watching the game, there was a couple positives that I liked. The first thing was it was nice to see Cadet out there adding a change of pace to McCoy. That was the first thing. Milano, it was good to see him out there. I think he needs to be implemented more on the in the scheme. I just think he just adds a speed element to the linebacker, a little bit of athleticism. But the one thing that I didn't like about the game was the end of the game play calling, the three and out. I think, you know, if you want to, you know, take on that, I'm the coach with the that's not afraid to make. To make the big decisions in a big opportune time. Well, that was one of the spots that you need to make a big decision. I just think that being conservative, you know, if you're playing a Tom Brady or you're playing somebody, even the Chiefs will come back and beat you.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to discount what you say, Mike, because Donald and I feel pretty much the same way. He made a big decision, McDermott did. The decision was to go ultra-conservative there.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about the sequence with 2:49 left, and the Bills had the football at their own 46, and they ran Shady McCoy twice. He lost 1 yard in those two plays, and then Tyrod Taylor kept it and lost another yard. Now, I'm sure McDermott's going to be asked about it in a couple of minutes. We'll carry his news conference live at 1 o'clock. And I'm thinking his answer is going to be something along the lines of, we wanted to make them burn their timeouts, yeah. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would have done it differently. You probably would have.
I would have.
But they made the Chiefs burn all three of their timeouts and put them in extreme stress when they got the ball back.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy because they run four-minute offenses in practice. They run two-minute drills in practice. And they do have a different reason why they do things. For me, it was interesting because yesterday I'm about to leave and get on the road to come back up here at the end of the game. So I'm putting my bags in the car and everything. And it was during this series. And so I go out. It was like first down.
Yeah.
I go out and I put my suitcase in the car and I come back. And my mom is like, yeah, Kansas City has the ball back. And
yeah.
I'm like, what? I mean, what'd they do?
15 seconds elapsed, that's all, because they use those timeouts.
Yeah, you know. So I understand that they made him use those timeouts. But, you know, there are certain points in the game where you need to really just – put a team down and make sure that you seal the deal. And they have not done that really all year. You know, they have not been able to, when they get in certain situations, go ahead and drive the ball down the field and, you know, kick another field goal or score a touchdown. They haven't been able to do that. That's something they're going to have to be able to do if they want to get into the playoffs, because you're playing some good teams here. You don't want to give Tom Brady the ball back at the end of the game. All right. They are a team that will drive down and score. So you can't just get ultra conservative. I don't care if you want to make them use all their timeouts. He can drive that team down the field and score with no timeouts.
Yeah.
They've been doing it forever.
I'm guessing McDermott will be asked about it. We'll hear his news conference when we return. We're going to break here, come back with more and more of your phone calls and more of your thoughts on what went well for the Bills yesterday, what were the factors in the Buffalo win. Eventually, we'll get to what we liked and what we didn't like in yesterday's game as well. Come on back to John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive. The Bills came up with a big win over the Chiefs yesterday, snapping Buffalo's three-game losing streak. Today, a rest and recovery day for the players. Coaching staff getting to work on the game plan for this Sunday's matchup against the Patriots. First of three straight home games coming up for Buffalo. Five games left. The Bills came out of yesterday's game relatively injury-free. We'll get an update from head coach Sean McDermott momentarily when we hear his news conference live. They may get a chance to get Calvin Benjamin back in the lineup this Sunday as well. Bills made a move on their practice squad today. They signed cornerback Lorenzo Doss, a former fifth-round pick of the Denver Broncos in 2015. I am told he was released by the Broncos last Thursday. He has appeared in 15 career NFL games, mostly on special teams. He is now on the Bills practice squad. Buffalo cut offensive lineman Will Persiak to make room. Big game impacting Buffalo's playoff chances tonight on Monday Night Football. The 4-6 Houston Texans against the Baltimore Ravens at 5-5. With the win, Baltimore would jump ahead of the Bills in the standings for the AFC wildcard playoff berth. Baltimore coming off a 23-0 shutout win at Green Bay last week. The Texans coming off a win against Arizona last week. Jimmy Garoppolo made his debut with the 49ers yesterday after the quarterback C.J. Beathard suffered a leg injury with 1:07 left to play. Beathard appeared to slam the back of his helmet on the turf, so Garoppolo came in, three snaps, scrambled for 4 yards, threw a 9-yard pass, and then a 10-yard touchdown pass to Lewis Murphy. And still, the 49ers will not commit to Garoppolo moving forward. College football coaching news. Tennessee backed out of a memorandum of understanding with Ohio State defense coordinator Greg Schiano to be the Volunteers' next head football coach. The news broke earlier yesterday that Tennessee was close to finalizing a deal with Schiano, and then there was public outcry among Tennessee fans with people citing his connection to Jerry Sandusky at Penn State. Sabres back in practice today after 6 games in 9 nights. Buffalo back in action tomorrow night against Tampa. And college basketball locally, Niagara home against Army tonight. That tips off tonight, 7 o'clock at the Gallagher Center on the Purple Eagles campus. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. Good afternoon to those of you tuned in on the radio side on WGR Sports Radio 550. And those of you watching on MSG, we're here every day. Noon to 3, except last Thursday and Friday.
The Niners should just stick with Garoppolo, right?
You would think so. I don't know what they're waiting for.
I mean, you put him in at the end of the game. I feel like he threw a touchdown pass in like a minute.
Yeah.
You might as well leave him in. Your season is done. Leave him in, see what he has for you, and then figure out if you need to go and draft one or not.
I don't understand what they're doing out there with that. You know, and I'm looking here at the quotes from Kyle Shanahan. He said since they acquired Garoppolo, they've been – hounded about when are you going to let Garoppolo play. And Shanahan, after the game yesterday, noncommittal. Quote, it's been a tough position to be in, but Jimmy will have another week. We'll watch his tape today, work with him on Tuesday, and see what happens at practice on Wednesday. All along, Shanahan has said that Garoppolo would not get the start until he feels he could put him in position to succeed. I mean, 49ers, you know, the season has basically slipped away from you already.
Right.
What are you waiting for? Aren't they at least curious what Garoppolo might have for
them? I would think you're curious to figure out what he has for you. You're going to put him in with 2 games left? Go ahead, put him in right now. And you got, 5 games left? See what he can give you, you know, and then you can figure out what you want to do moving forward. But you have no reason to sit him on the bench. You're not talking about a rookie quarterback. You traded a second-round draft pick for this guy. Put him in the game.
I don't get it. We'll take your phone calls as we await the arrival of Sean McDermott to the podium across the way over in the media room. Once we get him at the podium, we will pick that up live and talk some more about yesterday's win. But your thoughts on the Bills' victory, what did you think and what were the key factors? That's our Twitter poll today, trying to find out from you what you think the key was, isolating it down to maybe the one key for the Buffalo Bills in their victory yesterday. On Twitter, on the Twitter poll so far, more than half of you, 54% of you, say handcuffing Kansas City's playmakers, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce among them. 21% of you say pressuring Alex Smith. That's where I cast my vote. 16%, and I think this is worth debating anyway, discussing, the early 10-point lead changed the nature of that game. I thought it changed the nature of the crowd at Arrowhead Stadium yesterday. 9% of you have something else in mind. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. We'll squeeze in a call here, Michael in Marilla. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show. Michael in Marilla. Are you there, Michael in Marilla? Gone. Trevor calling from Miami. Hello, Trevor.
Yeah, how you doing? And I'll make it quick.
Okay.
So my thought on that, the three plays and out at the end of the game, was not that we went too conservative, but it almost seemed like McDermott said to Dennison, you know, hey, let's, you know, make sure they spend their timeouts. And Dennison pulled up the let's kneel on the ball three times and then said, oh, no, that's a little bit too conservative. Let's do something just a little bit above that. In my view, you know, if we could have done something that at least seemed like we were trying to get the first down but keep it where the clock would have been moving, that's kind of my take on it anyways. And if they didn't, does that say, oh, well, we don't trust Tyrod to make the right decisions, you know, to be able to keep the ball with safe passes, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I mean, they have to trust Tyrod, right, because the guy doesn't cough it up. You have to have that trust in him, I would think. But I think it was ultra-conservative. I probably would have done it differently. But we're going to hear McDermott, I believe, talk about it in a couple of minutes here. But let me say this. It worked, and they forced Kansas City to use all three of their timeouts. And if there's, say, a safe pass that Tyrod threw there that fell incomplete, now there's an extra timeout Kansas City
has. Right, exactly. I mean, I get the logic behind we want to make them spend their timeouts, you know, so we're going to run the ball so that they have to use their timeouts, and it puts them in a tough position as they get the ball back and have to drive all the way down the field. Our defense has been playing very well all game. So, you know, I put the trust in our defense, you know, and so I get that logic. For me, it's just always hard, man, when you give the team the ball back, you know, and you don't even try to pick up a first down or you don't even try to go for something, you know, get the ball moving. It's so hard when you just give the team the ball back and put it back into the hands of your defense, because that team does have playmakers, you know, and any one of those guys can make a play. No, they weren't. But all of a sudden you get Tyreek Hill, who is lightning fast. He gets a pass. You saw him against Dallas. You know, they were in prevent mode. Tyreek Hill got the ball and just ran around and ended up scoring going into halftime. You know, so I'm not a big proponent of giving the team the ball back.
I agree, but I do think it was ultra-conservative. But there is a case and an argument to be made for forcing them to spend their timeouts.
Yeah.
Because one incompletion in that series means one less timeout that they get when they get the ball back. Two incompletions means two more timeouts. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's part of the equation, too.
You talk about putting the trust in Tyrod. It's like, Tyrod, listen. Play like you normally play. Don't try to get outside yourself.
Remember all that stuff we told you last week? Forget about that.
Play like you normally do.
Old
check it
Tyrod
down to LeSean McCoy.
Yeah. We just trashed Tyrod.
We did, but sometimes, you know, you're a quarterback. It happens like that.
803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Mike in Buffalo. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I thought we had a good game yesterday. I thought the defense played really good. And I just wanted to say that I think Tyrod was playing pretty good in the games leading up to his benching, obviously excluding that Saints game. I think the offensive line wasn't giving him much help. And I think the defense was more of an issue as far as why we were losing the game. I know it all comes back together as one piece, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on that as far as if you think the defense is getting as much scrutiny as Tyrod for the way the games have been going.
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, that's all we've talked about for the three-game losing streak, you know. Look, the offense, Tyrod and the offense was miserable against the Saints, but the prior two games to that, actually, the game before that, the Jets game, they were pretty much who they were on offense. So, yeah, it's been defensive failures.
That's exactly what it is. It's defensive failures. Last year, it was defensive failures. This year, when the defense does not, aside from the Panthers game, which the defense played well in that game, the offense just weren't able to do anything. When your defense doesn't play well, you lose. You know, when the defense is not tackling, when they're giving up big play after big play after big play, you lose. Yesterday, they didn't give up those big plays. Yesterday they tackled. Yesterday, they came up with a key turnover and a key part of the game, and they won the game. You know, the offense is what it is. You know, I don't expect a big explosion on offense any week, really. I don't care who you're playing. Next week against the Colts, not even this week, but next week against the Colts, I don't expect this huge explosion on offense. That is what they are. You need your defense to play well if you want to win games.
Yeah, and when their defense is playing well, this team has a chance. And it comes down to what we said in the first few minutes of the show. We kind of know now as we move into December what the winning formula is for the Bills. It's strong defense if they're going to win. It's a pretty good effective running game, which they had yesterday. And it's don't turn the ball over on offense. That's their formula for winning.
Mm-hmm.
Is it good enough to win a championship? Probably not. You probably need to be more dynamic on offense.
Right.
But maybe good enough to squeak into the playoffs this year.
Right.
Which I think all of us would take.
And I think we'd all take that. And honestly, all you need to do is get into the tournament. You know, mm-hmm. anything can happen once you get into that tournament, but you got to get into the tournament. So if that's your formula, and for me, that is a – now, you need your offense to be able to do more, but winning teams play good defense.
Yeah.
You know, the championship teams can play good defense, and they can shut teams down. They can shut the best offenses down. You know, and if you can do that, then that is a winning formula that can put you in the playoffs and also help you win some games in the playoffs. You know, they have the right formula in terms of good defense, but you need your offense to give you a little bit more.
And don't be confused. And I don't speak for you, but that's not the formula the Bills have to follow into the future.
No,
that's this year's formula for a team that has pretty significant flaws, right? We can all appreciate that. Pretty big flaws. And yet their winning formula calls for them to play good defense, run the ball well, don't turn it over, which doesn't mean that's the plan for 2018 or 19 or into the future. So I don't want people to be confused by that.
No, I all teams have different formulas every year. You know, you look at the Saints right now. The Saints, for years, it was just a Drew Brees show. You're going to throw it all around. This year, they have a total different identity. You know, they have a total different formula. They have a good defense. They run the ball as well. Drew Brees is just, you know, icing on the cake because he can do what he wants to do whenever they need him to do it. But they have a total different formula for winning now.
All right. Let's go to Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, as he steps to the podium. We'll carry it live, his news conference.
All right.
Coach, there was
looked
like, you know, when you guys went to that 22 personnel on that fourth possession, it really opened some things up for you. It seems like you guys have had a good measure of success kind of running out of that or 21. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers yet to see if it's more successful than any other front formation. But what do you feel you find there that's helped you guys with some success coming out of that formation?
Running the ball-wise, yeah, I think we know we just altered personnel groups, different looks, you know, and changed the looks on the defense a little bit. You know, get some different personnel on the field also from us, different combinations. So that's worked at times.
Lorenzo said in the locker room that you and him had a talk about where he feels best, some of his strengths and weaknesses, and really kind of use that as part of the game plan. It looked like he was outside, he was inside. Can you just kind of walk us through, like, kind of the process of with him and where he fit in the defense last week and going forward with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we just gave some different looks. He played in the sub package a little bit for us in different spots. You know, he's a good football player, so, and a leader on this football team, and just wanted to present a couple different looks overall. It's more of a game plan thing last week more than anything.
What was behind Eddie Yarbrough getting the start over Shaq Lawson?
Well, really, it was just a situation for us that I'm going to keep between Shaq and myself at this point.
Would it be fair to classify that as disciplinary?
A situation that'll be kept between Shaq and myself.
Coach, on coverage, over the last 2 months, I mean, it's been in the top 10, like consistently.
Right, they've been outstanding, right.
Can you just maybe speak to how that unit has found, I mean, it might be the most consistent group on your team, like, for the last 2 months.
Right, I thought they did a good job. I thought Coach Crossman had a good plan with the coverage units. Colton punted extremely well, and that was key with that type of returner back there. And then the offense got us some favorable field position, too, which enabled them to pin them deep and then help the defense also. So, really, I think you're talking about what we're talking about here is just good complementary football amongst all three phases of the team. and a good plan special teams-wise as well. So, well done.
What went right on defense?
You know, you start with the run defense, mindset, number one, then the run defense, and you know, gap integrity, technique, assignment, good assignment, being 1/11th of the defense. That's really where it starts. You guys have heard me talk about that when you've asked me where have the problems been in the run defense. So that's really where it started up front.
When it comes, though, the disparity between the numbers, I mean, you know the numbers over the previous three games. Is it just simply flipping a switch? Is that, if it's that easy, I mean, everybody can do it.
Yeah, no, the guys have put in a lot of hard work. Leslie Frazier and the staff upstairs, you know, did a phenomenal job with the plan and implementing the plan. And the players have worked hard the last 3 weeks. It's never just a, you know, flip a switch. It's, you know, I mentioned this a week ago. There were signs a week ago that it was getting better. Statistically, probably wasn't there. But when you drill down, watching the tape, it had gotten better. Last week took another step. Are we there yet? No, still a lot of work to do.
Did you hear anything from the league in regard to that fourth quarter penalty?
Not yet. You're referring to the one on EJ?
Yeah.
Not yet.
I know coaches can submit their commentary to the league. I mean, have you taken advantage of that opportunity through the course of this year? Do you do it every week? Or?
That was good timing right there.
do you take advantage of it, just the opportunity to do
we
that?
We do, right, we do. Yeah, we do. And not just from... Hey, file a complaint, but more so, let's learn so that we can coach things properly on our side of the ball. Yeah.
Speaking of EJ, it just seems like him being available allows you to have more options, coverage-wise, scheme-wise, matchup-wise. So you're 5-2 when he's starting, he's played. Can you kind of just tell us a little bit about, you know, what he presents to you when he's on the field compared to when he's not, what you can do and what you can't?
Yeah, he's a good player. I mean, he's done some good things for us. You know, he knows the game. He understands concepts. You know, he's a good player for us, and you know, we're fortunate to have him.
Does he, though, Coach? I mean, does he – not a shot at anybody else, but does his skill set lend you to have more options on the back end when he's available versus when he's not?
You know, we have confidence in the players that are behind EJ. That said, you know, it's certainly nice to have your starter out there, which we've – been able to have now for a couple games, which has been good. He's worked hard to get back. Our trainers have done a good job with him getting back, helping him get back. You know, I know yesterday was a big game for him, being from that part of the country there. So, you know, it was good to see him have success out there.
Sean, are you aware at all of the history between the Bills and the Patriots? Have you looked at the gory details at all?
I'm aware of just overall the Patriots' success of late, in particular in the league. You know, I'm obviously the records speaks for themselves and their success. And, you know, like I said yesterday after the game, they're defending world champions. And until someone beats them and becomes world champion, then they are the defending world champions the way I see it. And that's from a respect place. And, you know, they do things the right way.
They'll keep you up at night. You probably learn a few things just if you look at their history and the way they've gone about their business.
Absolutely. You know, look, where I come from, you honor that in terms of the respect that you give to that quality of opponent, what they've been able to do and sustain that success. We have our work cut out for us this week.
You've only faced them as an assistant coach three times. It was twice when you were in Philly early in your career. And then I think it was in 2013 you guys beat them when you were with Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any of those, you know, getting ready to get ready for them?
Well, it's a headache, you know, a lot of long hours, a lot of communication between, you know, coaches and players and players and to player. And so it's, you know, they challenge you from a preparation standpoint. They challenge you off the field. They challenge you on the field. So they're a good football team.
You're not aware, but no Bills coach has beaten them twice since Belichick's been there. And Brady is 26-2 in the games he plays the full game, or majority of the game. I mean, those are some of the ugly numbers. And I know against the Bills. So are you familiar, to back to Bucky's question, of the history just in Buffalo and how Bills fans really look at the Patriots and almost automatically check off a loss?
I'm familiar with, you know, like I said, their run and their success around the league. And I understand what you're getting at there. What I'm most focused on right now is the game this weekend.
Coach, have you seen enough from Jabari Cadet that even when Mike Tolbert returns, he could see that or solidify himself with that number two back?
You know, I like both of those backs. You mentioned Mike as well with Travaris. I mean, Travaris has done some really good things in a short amount of time here. I like how physical he was with the ball for the second week in a row. So there's a good thing going on there with some good football players, and that's for us a good problem to have.
Sean, are you concerned about how your offense played? It obviously played better in the first half than in the second, but in the second, a lot of those same problems seem to kind of show up again, maybe not to the same extent as it did in previous games, but they were there.
Well, I mean, you know, look, we did enough to win the game. That said, in all three phases, we have to continue to improve, and not just offensively, but defensively, special teams. We have to continue to grow. You've heard me talk about this, Bucky, before, of just that growth mindset, that we're better today than we were yesterday. And we have to be looking at the film. We have to be honest with ourselves and making sure we're firm and what was and what wasn't up to the standard that we set early on here. So that's true of all of our football team.
Coach, I know Kelvin didn't make the trip. What measure of progress might he have made over the weekend, just staying here, probably working with the mm-hmm. trainers and stuff?
He's working hard, and he's going to be day-to-day as we move forward this week, and we'll see how the week unfolds.
There was a report that he had a torn meniscus. Is that accurate?
No.
Just how big of a win was that to kind of get past some of the things that went on the last 3 weeks and reinstill that confidence and that ability to go out and get a win for guys that you said had always given effort but didn't have the results they wanted?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, it's important when you're early on in the process. You know, you go through it. I've been around it in two other situations, and now this being my third and first time as a head coach, albeit. When you find different ways to win, and when you go through weeks like we had went through the last couple of weeks, and there's a lot of people would point to, hey, you know, you got to get lucky to win one of those games in an environment like we were in, and the guys have worked hard. They put the work in. They faced adversity before. This is a group of high character individuals that work hard, believe in one another, and so. We're developing a culture here, and to push through the way they pushed through the last couple of weeks, even though they didn't get the results that they were looking for, and then to get them yesterday, I think is really a testament to the culture and the guys in that locker room.
How does your message change as the season progresses? I mean, now that you get through that first half, and now you're into that entering the third quarter. How does your message change, especially when based on the record, now that you're 6-5 and back in firmly in the hunt?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question. It really doesn't change. The guys will tell you that I try and be consistent for them because I believe that's important, that my message is clear every week of what's expected, how it's expected, and when it's expected. And I think consistency goes a long ways towards players or giving the chance for players to be the best version of themselves. And that's what we're really looking for here is for us to continue to grow and get better so that we can put our best foot forward each and every day.
Coach, Tyrod said after the game that you showed the team something Saturday night, or 17 out of 19 didn't think the Bills were going to beat the Chiefs. What exactly did you show them, and did it have the impact that you were looking for?
Well, really, it's just about, getting the players in the right type of mindset before a game. And, these guys know that there's not a whole lot of people out there that believe in them, and that's okay. And we've got a bunch of guys in that locker room that have been told that you've heard me say this before, that they're not good enough or haven't been good enough. And so we'll use that. We'll use it to our advantage, and that's what they did yesterday.
Sean, did that same edge kind of lose itself a little bit when it was 5-2 and people were starting to think that you guys were turning the corner, playoffs might be on the table, everything like that? And then the three results that came from that, is there anything to that?
You look at it and you say, hey, maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's some of the crystal ball theory a little bit, Joe. But, you have to keep your edge every week in this league. And you heard me say this. We talked about it yesterday. It's going to tear you, pull you in different directions and challenge you. And you have to keep the edge. And with that edge, though, comes a strong foundation that you build every year, every week, that you continue to grow, continue to build, develop, and then work to sustain, because that's big also.
They've gotten a little bit too comfortable, you think? Look at it now.
I think we're just, we continue to learn. I don't know if getting too comfortable is the right word, Bucky, as much as it is. We continue to learn what it takes to win in this league on a weekly basis and then try and sustain it, which is tough. You look around the league, and there's a few teams that play very clean football and have very clean records every year, but those are few and far between. And so, we're trying to build this thing the right way, and that with that comes a mindset of attacking and focusing on that process every week.
When you look at how Tre'Davious White is playing compared to maybe other rookies in the league, how would you assess that?
I think he's playing at a high level. I really do. He's a young man that continues to develop both on and off the field. He works very hard at his craft. That said, he still has a lot of work to do and a big hill to climb. As a corner in this league, it's one play at a time, like it is for most positions, but in particular the cornerback position. And so, I'm anxious to see him in here this week and prepare the way that we're going to need to prepare as a football team when we go up against the defending world champs.
Sean.
All right, thanks, guys. Go ahead.
About that penalty, coaches, you have the ability to challenge a play if you like. Do you think coaches should have the ability to challenge a penalty?
They set the rules, and that's at this point what we focus on. So, yeah, thanks.
Sean McDermott talking to the media. No questions about that. I thought for sure somebody would ask him about it. Now I got to ask him, and I will, about the ultra-conservative
You got to ask him about it. And I guess most questions, people had already moved on to the Patriots.
Yeah.
It's Patriots week here in Buffalo. So
maybe
the last game doesn't matter.
Maybe it is pretty evident that it's just about the timeouts, right? It could be, right?
I would think, you can't really think of any other logical reason why they would do what they did, instead of going for a touchdown, we're going to force them to take their timeouts and really put the pressure on them, especially when our defense is playing well this game, and they won't have any timeouts. They'll have to score. They'll have to be able to move the ball down the field without being able to stop the clock.
Yeah. Calvin Benjamin came up. I don't know if that's, nothing really. You don't expect at this point Sean McDermott to let you know exactly where that's going, but he said he's working hard. He's day-to-day. I think there's a chance. That's just me talking. I think there's a chance he could be ready for New England.
You definitely don't say it this week against New England. Bill Belichick's not going to give you anything. Why give him anything?
In fact, he may throw disinformation out there.
Exactly. Because that's what Bill Belichick would do. So I'm going to try to beat you at your own game, and then all of a sudden maybe Kelvin Benjamin is out there on Sunday. They're going to need Kelvin Benjamin, though, in that game on Sunday. Tyrod is going to have to get him the ball, because you need – all your weapons to beat them. They are a team that's rolling. What are they, 9-2 right now?
Yeah, they're rolling.
They are rolling, and you need all your weapons to be able to score with them. You need your defense to be playing well to slow that offense down. But on offense, you need to be able to move the ball down the field. You need to be able to get a big play if you need a big play, because the Patriots are going to score, and you might score. They might score. The Patriots are notorious for coming out in the first drive and scoring a touchdown, and you go down 7-0 early in the game, So you need to switch things around, and now you need a big play out of your big receiver. They need Kelvin Benjamin out there.
And at the end of Sean McDermott's news conference, the questions about Tre'Davious White. And, yes, sure, Tre'Davious had the big splashy play that sealed the victory. And it was big for him, I think, more than just the victory, Donna, because, I'm not going to say he struggled, but he's had a couple of rough moments, the Jets game in particular, that come to mind, where he seems to take it internally, take it to heart so much. I think this is a guy who needs confidence-boosting plays like that interception yesterday. Not that he's going to go, off the reservation or lose focus, but – I don't know. I'm just saying I'm glad that he made that
corners
play.
Corners are sensitive, man. These corners. Guys, yeah, they're sensitive dudes. I think second would be
receivers.
Ooh, that's a good question. It's a toss-up between receivers and quarterbacks.
No, receivers get sensitive about little things.
Yeah, corners get they're sensitive. There's some sensitive guys on the field, man. They like to talk trash, but if you do something to them, I don't know what it is. It's the ultra prima donna position in the league. It's not receiver. It's corner.
Pot meet the kettle. Seriously. No way. No way. We're going to break. We want to get to what we liked, what we didn't like, but our Twitter poll is still up there. We'd like to hear what you liked and what you thought the key factor was in Buffalo's victory against the Kansas City Chiefs. What do you think? Vote in on Twitter. Chime in on Twitter. What was the key to the Bills' victory over the Chiefs on Sunday? About half of you say handcuffing is what I'm trying to say, the Kansas City playmakers. 23% say the pressure on Alex Smith. 22% say the early 10-point lead. 9% say something else. Give us a call. Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back. We just heard from Sean McDermott. We're going to hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. News from Coach McDermott, not much. He says Kelvin Benjamin is working hard in his day-to-day. He would be a key factor, one would think, for the Bills against the Patriots this week. Donald and I are not finished talking about the Bills' win over the Kansas City Chiefs, and we want to hear from you about what you think the key factor was. But we had some ideas, too, what we liked, what we didn't like in yesterday's game. And I got one. I'm going to start with this. Obviously, Donald, third down defense, outstanding for the Bills. 2 for 13 third down conversions for the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Bills, you know, and you won't hear McDermott talk about it much, but the Bills unveiled this package that it wasn't anything revolutionary, but they used Lorenzo Alexander in this package. They used him as a pass rusher, lined him up over the guard typically. Sometimes he dropped into coverage. Sometimes he rushed the passer. Sometimes he did a little bit of both, but I thought it was extremely effective in giving Alex Smith a different look on third downs in particular. And the Chiefs, as we said, struggled badly on third downs, just 2 for 13. So, yeah, I like that. I like the adjustment made by the coaching staff. That's one of the main things I liked about yesterday's Buffalo game.
And the crazy thing is they've been trying to make these adjustments, and not just players, you know, like putting someone in the lineup, taking someone out, but having guys do different things, you know, play in different spots all year. Maybe this is something that will work for them moving forward, you know, but they're going to have to add another wrinkle this week for Tom Brady because he's on a different level, you know. Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. But I do think you need to keep Lorenzo Alexander up rushing the quarterback. You know, that's just what he does good to me. I think Tavares Cadet is, you know, one person that I liked. And it doesn't really show in the stat sheet. You know, he didn't have this huge, tremendous game. But just the way he runs the ball, you know, with the physicality of how he runs the ball, the fact that he can catch the ball out of the backfield, the fact that, you know, he can juke you or run you over. You know, I like to watch him run the ball, and I think we've needed that from the backup running back position all year, you know, and that's not a knock on Mike Tolbert, but I think that Tavares Cadet is a running back that can do everything, you know, and I think Mike Tolbert is a guy that you use on short yardage at this point in his career.
I would like to see it go that way moving forward with the usage of both of them. Cadet seems to have great vision, good balance after he gets hit, and he's a really strong pass receiver, very valuable mm-hmm. in the passing game. You can see him set up blocks sometimes after he catches a pass downfield. So, yeah, I'm with you. I like that a lot. I talked about third down defense. I like the energy displayed by the entire defensive front in yesterday's game. And I think some of that energy came from a couple of guys who had not been getting a lot of playing time, quite frankly. They were sort of role players, Cedric Thornton and Eddie Yarbrough, both of whom were starters yesterday. And they seemed to alternate they alternated series with Adolphus Washington and Shaq Lawson. And I think they brought a lot of energy to what was going on up front. And again, a different look, yeah, but just different energy than what they had. The energy extended on the sidelines, Donald. There was one point in the second quarter. I don't know what the song was. You probably would recognize it. You know, some rap song.
I probably would.
You would. You'd probably be dancing with them. They were dancing on the sidelines to the point where it got some of the Kansas City Chiefs fans mad. But they were dancing on the sidelines while the offense was on the field during a long timeout. By the way, that was Yarbrough's second start this season for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, it was a full-out 6 or 8 guys dancing to the music, having a great time. And it was, you know, did it mean anything in the outcome? No, but I thought it was indicative in the kind of energy that that younger group, that newer group, brought to the game yesterday. And I was impressed by that. You know, remember I got upset in the Jets game Thursday night when that one long timeout when the Jets defense was dancing on the field.
Let me tell you, I remember – so yesterday, one of my boys was watching the game, and he was watching the Eagles game. And he tweeted out, and I was actually driving home, and I stopped at a rest area, and I saw that he had tweeted this out. And he's like, man, I love to see this Eagles team have fun. You know, they're winning, but they're having fun. And that's really all they're doing. You know, when your team is having fun, it's because you're doing something right. You know, and that Jets defense that night, they were doing something right. So they were having fun. The Bills yesterday were having fun on the sidelines.
It was really good to see, and I think I love the energy they had on the defensive side of the ball, defensive front in particular. What else did we like?
We liked a lot of things. you actually talked about Charles Clay in his game yesterday.
Yeah, I think Charles Clay had kind of a really good, solid game, underrated, not showing up in the stat sheet necessarily. As I look up Charles Clay's stats, he was targeted four times, caught four passes, 60 yards, including a 33-yarder. I thought he was outstanding. There was one play when he just fought for first down yardage. He was going under tackle, and he just fought and managed to stretch out and pick up the first down. I thought that was huge. There was another play when Charles Clay threw a tremendous block in the run game. I think Charles Clay, I mean, I think I've always known he was a valuable player, but you saw it yesterday, I think. What, four passes? Not going to blow anybody away with four passes. But in the second quarter, both of those plays in the second quarter, when he fought for yardage, it was a third and five situation. He picked up just 5 yards. This turned out to be the missed field goal by Hauschka. Same series, though. Clay threw a big block on a Traverse Cadet run around the right side. That was a third down play. I think Charles Clay is an underrated performer. And, I mean, he outplayed Travis Kelce yesterday, that's
for
sure.
He did, you know. And the reason I like it so much is because I've been on the Charles Clay bandwagon since I got here last summer. And I kept saying they need to get Charles Clay in the game, get him in the game, get him in the game, get him involved in this offense because he's a weapon, you know, and you have to pay attention to him. Charles Clay, we talk so much about Kelvin Benjamin, coming into this offense and being, you know, their number one receiver. But Charles Clay is their number one receiver, you know, and they use him in, you know, out routes. They use him in flags. They use him down the field a little bit. So he is a dangerous weapon that they need to continue to get the ball to. But you got to be careful with floating balls in the middle of the field, just throwing it up a punt basically and hoping that he comes down with it. He came down with it yesterday.
Marcus Peters was right there, though.
He was right. I'm surprised he didn't make that play. Yeah. I don't even know what he was doing. He jumped and, like, swung at the ball like he was throwing a right hook or something at the ball. But it could have been disastrous, either interception or you could have gotten Charles Clay hurt, you know, because he did float that ball up there in the air. Tyrod Taylor needs to throw it a little bit better than he did yesterday. But, yeah, Charles Clay, I think, is a weapon that they need to continue to feed the ball.
You know what? And thinking about that play and several others, I haven't done the breakdown, and I probably won't have time to, but my partner on Sundays, Mark Kelso, talks a lot about, with this Bills team, with the strong approach they have to the run game, they've got to go play action on first down. Mm-hmm. I bet out of the first downs yesterday, I bet 75% were play action passes. Yeah. I mean, they've got Kelso's message. They're doing it, play action pass. Whether or not they took it for him or not, it just makes sense. You detected better play on the offensive line, and I think Deion Dawkins had a pretty solid game.
Dawkins had a solid game, you know, and I think he is now set himself up where, you know, Cordy Glenn, I don't know if he plays again. I think that's Deion Dawkins' spot now.
Yep,
that left tackle position, that is his spot to lose. And I think he's doing a good job, you know, and we'll see as we move through the rest of the season. But I think he played well, and I think they did a good job, especially in the running game. You know, as they went over 100 yards rushing, LeSean McCoy had some big plays. They were able to move that Chiefs defensive front off the ball a little bit. Yeah, you still had some bad plays from guys on that offensive line, for sure, you know, and they need to cut down on those bad plays. But they were able to get the running game going, and I think that's a plus. Your offensive line is doing something right when you can get your starter going and your backup is getting some big plays as well.
That's some of the stuff that we liked. All right, and what did we not like? First of all, we liked the win. It was obviously a great win, but what did we not like? The offense in the second half. And I went back and looked at the video today trying to figure out what changed in the second half. The Bills only had 69 yards of offense in the second half. They went 0 for 5 on their third downs in the second half. They only picked up 4 first downs in the second half. I couldn't see anything that changed other than Kansas City, playing harder, playing more aggressive? I don't know, but the second half offense, clearly a reason for concern there. And I don't know. I'm sure that's job one for the Bills, you know, Rick Dennison and his crew as they sit down to work today.
One of the things I didn't like in the game was the red zone efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, and this is something that they haven't really been that good in all year. Now, a lot of times people think that they're in the red zone. They're not in the red zone. But yesterday they were in the red zone a couple of times, mm-hmm. and they were only 33%. You know, one for three in the red zone, and you can't have that. You need to be able to score touchdowns when you get into the red zone. I understand, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, it is so much harder to score touchdowns in the red zone because it's so tight down in there. You know, the football field in the NFL is already tight. Once you get into the red zone, you have no space to really work, but you have to be able to do it, you know. And yesterday, 33%, that's not going to get it done.
One more thing that I didn't like, I think you agree with me on this, and it wasn't anything the Bills did. It was what the down judge, Phil McKinley, did. That call, we talked about it a little bit in the first hour, just incredible to call that in that situation. I'm back to the old thing where officials, they do this all the time on holding. They call what they think looks like a hold. In this case, it may have looked briefly as an unnecessary roughness, a shot either up high or maybe late or maybe targeting up high. They called unnecessary roughness. The Chiefs, with no timeouts at their own 46, because of the it was a one-yard completion, but they get 15 yards on a terrible call by the down judge, Phil McKinley. I said it earlier, officiating is just so substandard in the league. The official is right there to see it. There was no contact from E.J. Gaines, and yet he felt comfortable enough to throw the flag and assess 15 yards on the play.
I mean, that, just the incredible. Official was right on top of it.
Yeah.
Literally right on top of the play. You can see him in the replay. If you go back and watch the replay, you will actually see the official standing right there on top of
Could
the play.
Could have had a better look at it.
Right, exactly. And you decided that, oh, that's rough. You know, that's unnecessary roughness. And then y'all huddled together when there's a bunch of other officials on the field that I'm sure were like, wow, that's – I don't know
Are
about
you
that.
Sure
one.
About that? I mean, just imagine that dialogue.
And you still made the call, you know? So, yeah, that wasn't good at all.
That's what we like, what we didn't like from yesterday's Bills-Chiefs game. We'll get to some of your thoughts on the game and what the key factors were in Buffalo's victory when we return. Chris Brown's going to join us at the top of the hour as well, so come on back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Going to get your thoughts on the Bills, what you liked about yesterday's win, what were the key factors. We haven't talked much, Donald, about we did a little bit. This game tonight, Monday night game, is huge mm-hmm. for the Buffalo Bills. Houston and the Baltimore Ravens coming up tonight. 8:30 in Baltimore, the Ravens at 5-5. If Baltimore beats Houston, which they are favored to do, they would jump back ahead of Buffalo in the wild card race. And you look at the rest of Baltimore's schedule, home against Detroit next week, a game at Pittsburgh, a game at Cleveland, and then they finish with two straight at home, Indianapolis and Cincinnati. Not an extremely rough schedule for the Baltimore Ravens, who, as we said, are just right now, a half game behind the Bills in the wild card standings. Got to keep an eye on those Ravens, I think, moving down the stretch here.
Yeah, you have to. Today, I mean, they play the Texans tonight, and the Texans without Deshaun Watson, that's a different team, you know. So this is a team that we have to pay attention to, because if they win, they go right back into that sixth spot, right?
Yeah, they jump ahead of Buffalo.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll be, you know, looking up at them. But they still have to play the Lions, which the Lions team can beat them. They still the Steelers, which, you know, the Ravens-Steelers is a huge game. You got the Browns, the Colts, and then the Bengals the last week of the season. We could be looking at a situation, the last game of the season, where the Bills need to beat Miami in Miami, and then you'd be watching the Bengals and Ravens game to see who wins that game. And whoever, if the Ravens lose, then the Bills are in the playoffs. If the Ravens win, then the Bills are out of the playoffs.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
We'll see if it plays out. James calling from Amherst. Hello, James. Welcome.
Hey, what's going on? You guys are talking about playoffs. You guys are ruling out 11-5 and beating the Patriots and then losing to the Steelers. Winning the division?
We rule out nothing.
Okay, that's great. Okay, I wanted to talk about the game yesterday. That was great. The first thing Donald touched on it was Travaris Cadet. I've been happy about it. It's unfortunate that Mike Tolbert got injured, but that might be a good thing for the Bills because he's just he's not quick enough to, you know, make anything happen except, you know, a line drive right up the middle. That's all he can do. So Travis could that give you a little bit better of a spell for McCoy for when he taps his helmet and goes to the sideline. You can actually get things, you know, keep, you know, the same type of game plan going, because we were throwing, you know, giving Tolbert stretch plays. Like, no, that was horrible. But, you know, hopefully he can come back healthy and, you know, fill in as a fullback like he should. Another thing was Zay Jones, another good game from him. I'm happy about that. He's been good since the injury, and he was, you know, having that breakout game anyways. The middle of the defensive line, that was a big improvement from the week before. Oh, my God. There's a big gaping hole the past couple weeks, and they shored that up somehow. I don't know if it comes down to scheming, who you're playing against, or just pure effort, but we were getting great penetration there. And the late game play calling was a bit conservative, but we won, so, you know, we'll take that. But we got to trust the process. And Tyrod did, he took chances, and it paid off. Like that Charles Clay one, he definitely took a chance on that one, but yeah, it paid off when he took chances. So I wanted to know what you guys thought about.
Thanks, Jamie. Hey, Donald, it's almost, you know, trust the process is a cliche.
How many people are trusting the process now?
A few more than did.
Versus last week.
Yeah. But the other cliche that comes up around this team this year, the last couple of weeks, gap integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have more of it yesterday, and how do you measure that? I went back and looked at the video today, and
I haven't watched the video.
Yeah.
I just think yesterday, yeah, they probably had better gap integrity.
It didn't seem
like there were big holes or anything,
right?
There, and gap integrity means if you're supposed to be in this gap, don't jump out of it trying to make a play.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they were doing the past couple of weeks. But you have gap integrity, and that's being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, taking on certain blocks. And, you know, because what happens is you want to make a play. You want to make a play. So you'll jump out. You have a lineman coming out at you as a linebacker. You'll jump out of a hole to try to make a play, and then the running back runs right in that hole, you know, and the lineman just washes you out. So what you're supposed to do is you take on that lineman and stuff the hole up so somebody else can – basically, just do your job.
Yeah.
Don't try
yeah.
to do somebody else's job. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
But for me, the biggest thing was just tackling yesterday, you know, and that's what they did. They tackled. They swarmed to the ball. You see, you know, 3-4 guys making tackles. You didn't even see that many guys stripping, trying to get the ball out yesterday. I think it was straight fundamental. Guys, we make tackles this week. If we don't get turnovers, we will make tackles so that they don't continue to get extra yards down the field.
If I were a Chiefs fan, I'd be disappointed in the trajectory of Kareem Hunt's season. You know, he still is the second. I mean, he was the second leading rusher in the league mm-hmm. going into yesterday's game. You'd never know it by the way he ran and by the way the Bills handled him. He seems to be slowing down.
Yeah, he definitely seems to be slowing down. And you're talking about a running back that is a rookie.
He still is the second leading rusher in the league.
Yeah, he's a rookie, though, you know. And
yeah.
Now, their offensive line didn't play that well yesterday, but at the same time, he's a rookie, and that rookie wall is real. You're talking about, you know, he was at Toledo. He wasn't even at Alabama or one of those schools. You know, he was at Toledo, and now he's playing in the NFL, and they are counting on him to, you know, to help that team get into the playoffs. Toledo's season is basically over by this time, you know, and now, oh, we got 5 more games? Man, I'm tired now. I'm done with football. You know, in my mind, I'm usually done with football. Rookies really haven't had any time off. And when you're a running back and they really give him the ball a lot,
yeah,
you know, that's a lot of wear and tear that you might not be used to in one season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to follow what happens with the Chiefs down the stretch. More interesting to follow what's coming up with the Bills. And our show coming up is Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Standing by to join us. We'll have some brownie points to talk about and take some suggestions from you about unsung heroes in yesterday's win. Plus, we'll go through NFL true or false and more discussion of the Bills' victory over Kansas City. All of that in the final hour of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update comes from One Bills Drive. Bills players off for the most part today. Several players in for conditioning and probably some meetings. The coaching staff meeting hard, getting set for Sunday's matchup against the New England Patriots. That's the first of 3 straight home games for Buffalo. 5 games left on the schedule. The Bills came out of yesterday without any serious injuries. Head coach Sean McDermott said today there's on Kelvin Benjamin, the wide receiver, says he's working hard He's day-to-day, leaving the door open for Benjamin to return for the Patriots game on Sunday. Bills made a signing for their practice squad today, signing cornerback Lorenzo Doss, former fifth-round pick of the Denver Broncos a couple of seasons ago. He was just released by Denver on Thanksgiving. He's appeared in 15 career NFL games, most of that action on special teams. A critical game for the Bills' playoff chances tonight on Monday Night Football. The Houston Texans and the Baltimore Ravens. If the Ravens win, they jump ahead of Buffalo again in the standings in the race for the sixth and final wildcard spot. That's an 8:30 kickoff tonight at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. 49ers say they'll wait and see whether Jimmy Garoppolo will play. Garoppolo got in a brief appearance yesterday when rookie quarterback C.J. Beathard got injured in the 49ers' loss yesterday to Seattle, 24-13. Garoppolo threw a touchdown pass, but Niners coach Kyle Shanahan says he will wait and see. He does not want Garoppolo to go in until they feel he is absolutely ready. College football, a couple of coaching moves. Greg Schiano was in line to be the next head coach at Tennessee, but the Vols backed out of it when news broke that there was public outcry among Tennessee fans, some of those fans citing Schiano's connection to the Jerry Sandusky era at Penn State. Texas A&M fired football coach Kevin Sumlin Sunday after six seasons. Sabres on the practice ice today. They played six games in nine nights, finishing off with that 3-0 loss in Montreal Saturday. Buffalo back in action tomorrow night. Tampa Bay Lightning come to town. And college basketball locally, Niagara home 7 o'clock tonight against Army. Purple Eagles trying to build on their win at home, 96-74, last Friday night against Alabama A&M. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined by our buddy Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. On the set, in studio with us here in Orchard Park. Good afternoon, Chris. Happy Victory Monday to you.
Sure, we'll take it, right?
Yeah.
It's been a little while.
It's been a rough stretch.
So, yeah, it was certainly a welcome victory. I don't care whether you thought it was pretty, ugly, or somewhere in between. Just win, baby.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. I mean, the best teams in the league have ugly victories. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just really all that matters.
This one built on the backs of the Buffalo defense, which was good to see after, what, consecutive games where they were averaging 45 points scored against for three straight games.
Right. 55 yards rushing is all that the Chiefs could muster, and that's the third lowest total that the Bills have allowed this season. So to get back, not only to get your run defense back where you want it, but to have it perform in the dominating fashion that they put on display Sunday, I think was a very encouraging sign going forward, because really that's what they had hung their hat on in large part in getting the five victories this season. So to see them win that game on the road in similar fashion, I think is a good sign.
Donald and I were talking at the end of last hour about this, and I want to get your take. What does gap integrity mean, and how does it apply to yesterday's victory for the Bills, the run defense?
I think it just means doing your job.
Wasn't that somebody's
it was.
Key to the game
yesterday? It was. Wow.
Bills all access?
Do you want me to pick up your hand and pat your back with it too? Or?
Didn't I say do your job?
You did say do
and
your job.
And I think I mentioned gap integrity.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? I kind of know what it means, but how much of a factor was that, gap integrity, yesterday?
I thought it was very important. Ironically, when I was looking at some of the plays back this morning from the game, I saw a couple of instances where the Chiefs did not have gap integrity. There was a 10-yard run by Shady McCoy where Raglan over-pursues the play and gets caught up in the trash, and he can't get back to his gap, and Shady's got a 10-yard gain and a first down. So it was very important. And I think that's why you didn't see a lot of big plays in the run game from the Chiefs. Kareem Hunt, with all his struggles in the last five games, was still averaging 3.6 yards a carry. Yesterday, he averaged 1.5. Mm-hmm. I think the linebackers did a great job of shooting gaps, especially on stretch plays. Got great penetration where even if they didn't make the tackle, they strung the play wide where, you know, the ball carrier had to take a wider angle to get to the corner because the penetration was coming in. This was the first game in a month where –
you saw that.
Buffalo's defensive line won the line of scrimmage battle. They were aggressive. They were violent. They were playing intense football every single down, every single series. And you see what a difference that makes. Because even if you're not the guy making the play, just winning at the line allows the linebackers behind you to get where they need to go to have that gap integrity that you're talking about.
When your defensive line is not winning the battles, you're getting backed up into your linebackers' faces. And then all of a sudden, they can't see where they need to go. They can't read their keys because there's a defensive lineman. You know, my own guy is backed up into my own face. Brownie, yesterday we saw something, and especially in the passing game, that was a little bit different this year, and that was Lorenzo Alexander down on the line. Now rushing the passer a little bit more.
Right, and there are times through the course of the season where in the nickel package they would use him as a stand-up rusher, and he would replace Lawson. You know, Shaq might come off the field, or the right end would come off the field if Jerry's getting a break. And they would use him in the nickel package as a pass rusher, not as a linebacker. But there looked to be more extensive work for him yesterday in the way they moved him around in some of the sub packages, because there were instances where he was a linebacker. Then there were instances where he was a defensive end for all intents and purposes. And it really kept the Chiefs' offense guessing. I really got to credit Leslie Frazier with the game plan here, because there were times, too, where I thought they effectively disguised what their coverage was, and it was clear that Alex Smith was crossed up. He held on to the ball too long on several occasions. That allowed the rush to get there and get home for the first time in a long time. So you got to credit the defensive staff here this week for coming up with a coverage scheme on the back end to help the guys on the front end.
And that gets to kind of our Twitter poll, and I voted on our Twitter poll for the option that said pressure on Alex Smith. And look, they only wound up with two sacks, Bills did. But he was confused. And you know, we'll talk about the Twitter poll here, Chris, and we want to get your thoughts on what the key element of the Buffalo victory was, what you thought sealed it for Buffalo. And almost half of our respondents say it was handcuffing Kansas City's playmakers. That happened, obviously, Tyreek Hill and Kelsey didn't do anything, and the running back didn't do much. But I think pressuring Alex Smith was key, not to get sacks, but to confuse him, to give him different looks. I think the early 10-point lead was a factor because it allowed the Bills to play a certain way. We know they're not a good come-from-behind team. If you had to choose one factor there, Chris, what would you choose?
I'd probably pick the Alex Smith one, but I would say it was more confusing him than it was pressuring him. I mean, I give more of the credit to the guys on the back end that really disguised coverages especially well, and the Bills played more cover two than they usually do, but they didn't show their hand before the snap. They disguised it, made it look like a look that they've shown much of the last few weeks, and then bang, all of a sudden they drop into that cover two shell. And they mixed in, you know, some three deep zone in there enough to have Smith guessing as to just what he was looking at, because I saw him hitching a lot and not getting the ball out, and then by that time the rush could get there, and that's largely what helped when they were in passing situations. The run defense put them in those passing situations. So I think it was a combination of things defensively, but when you're talking about passing down specifically and what Alex Smith was able to do and not do, those coverage looks on the back end really crossed him off.
Hey, Brownie, what about the back end of this defense specifically? And I know the questions were asked of Coach McDermott. You know, they asked him about E.J. Gaines, and this team is 5-2 when he's in the lineup. How much of a difference is he making in the lineup?
Well, when you have your two starters out there, it certainly helps. You know, they've had to play with a different combination of secondary players probably for about six of the first 9 weeks, and now these last 2 weeks they've had their starting corners on the field, and it makes a difference, guys, when you have your best coverage players out there. Look at what happens. You know, you actually can stop the pass. So I think it's a pure talent thing that Gaines and White, when you have them both on the field, you're going to make more plays. It's that simple, and that's why injuries are such a difference maker in the NFL. Because from 1 week to the next, and it's why Murph always likes to, you know, blow the trumpet on it's a week-to-week league. It is, because 1 week you can have your best players on the field, and the next week when you don't, you're a much different unit. And I think we've seen that with the Bills' defense.
I just looked it up. That was only the seventh of the 11 games where Tre'Davious White and E.J. Gaines were in the starting lineup together.
Right.
And what's the one-loss record with Gaines?
5-2.
5-2. Yeah. So seven games with that. Give us a call if you have thoughts on this or anything else regarding yesterday's Bills victory. Lines are open 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Before we take your call, Chris, you asked the question at the McDermott news conference last hour about personnel package on offense, the 22 personnel, two tight ends, two backs. It was key. And our buddy Mark Kelso has a man crush on Patrick DeMarco, but he does make a difference, I think, in the run game when he's in there.
Yeah, and it was the fourth possession, which ended up being the touchdown drive. They come out on those first two plays in 22 personnel, which, for those that don't know the lingo, that's two backs, two tight ends, Chantrell Henderson serving as tackle-eligible tight end, whatever you want to call him, but that's essentially 22 personnel. They come out, bang, 10 yards with Shady, then the next play, 7 yards.
With a huge block by DeMarco.
And it really got them into a rhythm there where you could almost see the body language of the players on offense. All right, here we go. We're gonna get it in the end zone this drive. And there was just this flip of the switch where they had Kansas City on their heels. And there have been other instances this year where I've felt that whether it's 22 personnel or 21 with DeMarco in the backfield, it's been a productive formation for them in its various forms because they have different looks. Sometimes Charles Clay will be detached and it's still 21 personnel, even though he's not part of the blocking scheme. And it's worked for them. They've averaged over 4 yards a carry this season in 21 personnel, haven't been quite as successful through the course of the whole season in 22 personnel. It's been around 3 yards a carry there. But yesterday, it was an effective personnel grouping for them. And maybe, you know, based on the game plan, it was more effective against the Chiefs, which don't really have that super stout defensive front anymore. Don Terry Poe is not there anymore. Alan Bailey was just coming back off an injury. And so I think they're a lighter front than they've been in years past, and I think that enabled Buffalo's offensive line to really get the best of them yesterday, more often than not, even though the rushing yardage won't show that.
Did you get the answer you're looking for from Coach McDermott?
Not exactly. And I was trying to highlight a positive part of the offense yesterday, and I still couldn't get it.
You were saying
a little flummoxed by
you
that.
You don't really like when they try to run out of 11 personnel.
Well, the part of the problem there, and Mark Kelso, I'm going to give him credit because he brought this up first, not me, and he certainly knows a whole lot more about X's and O's than I do, but with all the eight in the box that the Bills see, very often when they run 11 personnel, it's in a down where, I don't want to say they're expected to run, but the threat of the run is strong.
Yeah.
And the opponent, in an effort to stop Shady McCoy, will put eight in the box. Well, you put eight in the box against 11 personnel, it's 6 versus 8 in the blocking scheme because you got three receivers out in the formation. So at best, you have 6 blocking for you, and 6 versus 8 is just it's just not a good combination.
Right.
You're not going to win too many of those. Now, you know, I went and looked at how well the Bills are doing in 11 personnel this season, which is clearly their most popular formation this year. I mean, it's not even close. They run out of 11, run plays out of 11 personnel more than any other personnel package this season. They actually average 4.8 per carry. So I understand why Coach Dennison runs out of that formation. But when they're facing the 8-man boxes that they had been facing each of the last 3 games prior to yesterday, I'm all for going to 22, 21. Let's mash. Okay, if you're going to put 8 in the box, we're going to put extra blockers in there, and let's mash. Let's get a hat on a hat and see who's better. I'd rather do that when you're running into problems running out of 11.
This is why it's so important for your offense to be complementary, because if a defense doesn't trust that you can throw the ball, they're going to stay base. Yep. When you go 3 wide, they're going to stay base, and they're going to keep those guys in the box because they don't trust that your quarterback can get the ball to those receivers.
And that's exactly what New Orleans did.
Right. Yeah.
They stayed in base personnel when the Bills went 11 personnel because they said, we think our linebackers can handle your receivers. We don't have enough respect for your receivers. Mm-hmm. We're going to stay in base, and if you run out of 11, we've got you. And they did. Yeah. And I was expecting that to be a blueprint going forward, and the Chargers did some of that, probably not as much as they should have, but they didn't have to because the game was over by halftime. Right.
See, and that's why when you say let's mash, I'd prefer to see a team try to throw themselves. You know, try to throw them out of an 8-man box.
Yeah, but that's not what this offense is built to do.
I know. That's
especially
the limitation
with,
here.
With Tyrod Taylor. And,
I get it.
You know, we're looking at 185 passing yards a game.
I know.
I think you have to turn to 22 and 21 personnel, get DeMarco on the field more, and let's go.
Yeah.
Let's put a hat on a hat and see if you're the better side.
Chris Brown is with us, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Let's work in a couple of phone calls here. David calling from Lackawanna. David, go ahead. You're on the air. Hello, David. Yes, go ahead.
How you doing? How you doing, guy?
Good.
Yeah. I would like to talk about the points and stuff that I liked in the game yesterday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked the player, the quarterback, which is Tyrod, because he protected the ball. And the defense finally woke up and played excellent. I mean, they played like they was playing in the beginning of the season. I'm sorry, I
thought you were finished. Tyrod played the way Tyrod plays, I thought, with a couple of on-target throws, really, and very few off-target throws, I thought, and some, you know, enough yardage on the ground to help out. I thought it was a standard, pretty good Tyrod Taylor game yesterday.
Yeah, high completion percentage. Yeah. He was up over 65% again, which has been his percentage so far this season, which, by the way, would be a single-season career high if he can sustain it. And, yeah, he made some good decisions with his legs when he had to in some third-down situations to boot. The difference in this game and the reason the Bills had a 10-point lead at halftime was because the Bills were 6 for 12 on third-down conversions in the first half, and the Chiefs were 0 for 6. Mm-hmm. The Bills won this game on third down in the first half and then hung on in the second half, where, oh, by the way, they went 0 for 5 on third down on offense. And the Chiefs still struggled but got conversions. You know, they were 2 for 9, I want to say, in the second half on third downs, or 2 for 7, something like that.
There's a call from Jerry in Buffalo. Go ahead, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I know you said earlier the formula for them, at least for this year, is, good defense and, special teams, et cetera, and a little help from the offense. But that being said, would you say even Tyrod pulling off another major upset, and that would be even a bigger one, to beat New England, that still will not save his job for next year? In other words, do you think they've had their mindset already on what they're going to do?
I want to hear what everybody says. I would say no, I don't think their mind is set. And I also, Jerry, look back at a year ago, probably a year ago today, we're all saying, well, and the season's over, Tyrod's gone. I don't know that decision's been made yet. Clearly, they, manipulated the lineup a couple of weeks ago with Tyrod, which doesn't bode well for the future. But I don't think anything's set. You guys have any thoughts on that?
I'll say this. We're not going to get that decision until they have to make the final decision on his contract.
When that his roster bonus is due in March, exactly. Third day of the new league year.
Don't expect any leaks or any of that stuff to come out.
And by that time, you would think it would be deep into their evaluation of the rookie crop of quarterbacks coming out, which I don't think is clearly honest, not complete yet.
I wouldn't be shocked if they kept him here and still drafted one. I wouldn't be shocked if that was the case, because if you draft one, who knows what that rookie is going to do, So I just wouldn't be shocked if they said, look, Tyrod is – we're going to keep him here, and he's going to be the starter moving into the season. We drafted so-and-so in whatever round of the draft, and he might be the guy moving forward, but you still need to have a guy here.
Brownie, anything on this?
I think we have to remember that for this coaching staff and for this front office, this is the first year that they're looking at Tyrod under the microscope on a daily basis in their offensive scheme. So their evaluation is far different from what the evaluation is of the fans who have seen him for almost three years now with the Bills, and even for us, because we've seen him for almost 3 years now. So I think their evaluation is going to be in stark contrast to the general population evaluation, just by virtue of the fact that he's under the microscope for them for the first year, for the first time, and in their offensive scheme. So there's going to be a lot of evaluation that takes place after the season's over. They're going to grind down on the tape and make a decision going forward. And will the upcoming draft have an impact on that? I'm sure it will, based on what they think could be available to them when they get to late April.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've got to have at least some semblance of an idea as to what direction they could go in the draft. They've got to project, because they've got a decision to make on Tyrod in March. Draft's not until the end of April. So they've got to know what eggs they're going to have in that basket in the draft and which ones they're going to pull out of that basket potentially to know what they're going to do with Tyrod in March.
You know, my thing is with Tyrod's salary, and I don't have the numbers in terms of what it would be if they bring him back for next year. I know his salary goes up a little bit.
He's got a $6 million roster bonus in March on the third day of the league year that he has to be paid right then. Right. And that,
and then base salary.
Right.
What is his base salary for the season?
I want to say it's 11.
Right.
10 so or 11.
I'm going to guess 9 or 10.
But 10, 11 million dollars is low money for quarterbacks in this league. So if you're talking about keeping him here at that number and then you have a draft pick at wherever you're drafting, you know, the draft pick's base salary is going to be whatever it is for, yeah, you know, that slot. But yeah, so you're not talking about crazy money in one room, you right, know. So right. If they decided to keep him here, I wouldn't have an issue with that. Right. People have thrown out, well, you need to go get Kirk Cousins or whoever. You're talking about paying big-time money for Kirk Cousins. Maybe you think he is the guy, you know, but are they ready to do that when this is a team that is talked about? They like to build through the draft.
And this also part of the equation will be, where are we as a team? What else do we need? Are we mm-hmm. ready to make a big quarterback free agent splash?
Right.
I don't know if they feel like, you know, that puts them over the top yet.
Plus, you also have to consider, coaches have to consider this, what kind of environment are you creating? If you keep Tyrod, draft another quarterback, that quarterback's drafted in the first or second round, the expectation there, how it impacts everything, what kind of schedule is that quarterback, if he's drafted in the first or second round, going to be on in terms of how soon he gets on the field or not? And does it cause too much friction where it fractures the team? It splinters the team because there will be a Tyrod camp. I don't think there's any debate about that, just based on the time he has invested here with teammates, with the organization, and who's on board with the new guy. And there's a dynamic there that I think you have to weigh very carefully, knowing how important Coach McDermott considers locker room chemistry.
Let's squeeze in one more phone call while Chris is with us. Milton in Buffalo. Go ahead, Milton.
Well, how you guys doing?
Great.
Two things. It was a great game, and you know, I think the benching lit something under Tyrod, so we're going to be all right. But there's two key things that got to be fixed. First, with Tyrod, let me talk, John, real quick. With Tyrod, you got to get the ball out just a little bit quicker, because that one play to tight end, that's supposed to be like a first down, and you know what I'm saying, get like 20 yards after that, you know what I mean? But that was crucial. The second thing is the last 2 minute like offense, whatever you call that, at the end. You know, we gotta take more chances. I think Dennison needs to just, you know what I mean, have trust in the players that we have. What do you guys think?
We've talked about the last offensive series for Buffalo before the kneel down. We talked about it a lot. I think Donald and I were thinking how ultra conservative it was, Chris. I can't believe nobody asked Coach McDermott about it.
Well, it only took 8 seconds off the clock, but the benefit that you got there, even though you didn't get the time off the clock that you probably wanted, was you burned all three
timeouts.
Of the Chiefs' timeouts. They only had the two-minute warning left to work with when they got the ball back. I guess what you're weighing there is how well your defense had played up until that point. So maybe you felt it was okay to be conservative. Let's just run the ball three times, force them to burn their three timeouts, and then put it on our defense, because the way they're playing today in this game has been pretty rock solid. There's no reason to think that's going to change. It's not like they're going to be tired. The Chiefs had only had the ball for about 23 minutes in the game to that point, so there wasn't an enormous amount of plays that your defense had even been on the field. So I have to believe that's the line of thinking that Coach McDermott had with his staff at that point in time. So they say, let's just run it three times. If we get a first down, great. If we don't, we've burned their three timeouts. Let's put our defense on the field and go win the thing. That had to be the thinking, don't you think?
I do. It was about burning timeouts. Hey, Chris, before we let you go, at the news conference an hour or so ago, Sean McDermott was asked about Kelvin Benjamin's status, and he said he is working hard. He is day-to-day, and since then, an update on exactly what the injury is, some clarification, right? Did you get that? Did you see that?
I did not. No.
The Bills confirmed that Kelvin Benjamin does, in fact, have torn meniscus. McDermott thought the question was about a torn ligament. So he does have torn meniscus, which, you know, I'm not a doctor. I don't know.
Right. Well, from what I understand, and I'm not a doctor either, but there are different kinds, different degrees of meniscus tears. There are some where you've got to go in and scope the knee. I believe that's what Charles Clay had earlier this season in week five.
4 weeks.
It's about 3 to 4 weeks recovery time. There are other meniscus tears where you can rehab it and play. Sometimes you do have to get it addressed at the end of the year, but it's not something that would keep you off the field long term. So whatever the nature of this meniscus tear is, we don't know, and we probably never will. But we'll have to see. I think he's refuting the report that Adam Schefter had on Sunday, and he indicated that Kelvin would be out multiple weeks. And I think that's what Coach McDermott is arguing.
Okay. Chris, you going to run over? There's coordinators talking at 2:45. We'll carry that live. And looking for brownie points. You're looking for suggestions.
That's right.
I got one. Charles Clay, I think, underrated. A couple of big plays, stretching out for a first down, big block on a second quarter run by LeSean McCoy. I think in his own quiet way, Charles Clay really contributed big to you.
Very quietly, had 60 yards on four catches.
Yes.
And my favorite of all was the one that looked like it was going to be a pick six.
Floater. Yeah.
Even Greg Gumbel on the television broadcast had half of the word interception out of his mouth. Clay with the catch, caught it. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So I think even Charles the crowd Clay didn't believe it either, because it was like, it was like one of those roller coaster reactions.
I'm still wondering, like, why Tyrod threw the ball up the way he did, you know? Instead of putting it on a rope, it was like he threw it up there. And I'm sure Charles Clay and his mind is praying the ball just comes down. Please come down.
I still don't know what Marcus Peters was doing on that play.
I know.
I watched it on replay, and he went for, like, a hand swipe when if he just ran full speed, he would have been running the other way.
Yes, that was a pick six.
Would have been a clean – what is he doing there? Our MSG viewers are seeing it.
That's a play that he
wants back. I couldn't fathom what his thinking was on that play. It was mind-boggling to me how a corner, who's known for picking off passes, did that. Yeah. Thank you, Marcus Peters.
Brownie points.
That's right, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yep, tomorrow, yep.
All right, we're going to break. We're going to come back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
In the shotgun, the snap to Alex Smith. Looks right. Fired. It is picked off. It is intercepted. Going back the other way. It is Tre'Davious White at the 35. And he's still on the run inside the 25. Cuts to his right at the 15. At the 10. He is down at the 10-yard line. Tre'Davious Tre'Davious White. Unbelievable. That interception, the Advanced Alarm defensive play of the game. Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. A lot of good defensive plays in that game. That was the best.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were in a cover three. He dropped out like he was in a cover three, and whoever the receiver was, I believe it was Tariq Hill.
Yes, it was.
You know, he ran like a curl route. And Tre'Davious, because he was in a cover three, was able to just jump it.
Yeah,
you know,
I think he made a good jump. Smith may have thrown either the wrong side or maybe the route wasn't correct. Hmm. When you look at that play, the ball was off to the side a little bit.
Well, okay, yeah.
Which gave Tre'Davious a chance to jump in there.
I just looked on the TV copy. They showed it, and I was just paying attention to what coverage he was in.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where he came from. You know, I'm like, where did Tre'Davious just come from on that route? I didn't know if he peeled off of someone else. And he was actually covering him, but he was in a cover three. So when you get in a cover three as a corner, you're already dropping back, you know. So if somebody runs a hitch or a curl, all you have to do is plant and drive on the ball as fast as you can. And he did it perfectly. And, you know, the ball went right into his hands. I think the ball was a little bit off, you know, and it went right into his hands, you know, and he did a good job of returning it. I saw someone that was upset he didn't return it for touchdown. You can't satisfy everybody. It's just like you just sealed the game, and you're upset that he didn't return it all the way for a touchdown.
He was trying. He burned a lot of clock.
Oh man!
Yeah, he was trying to get there.
Stiff arm, Alex Smith.
Yeah. What do you think? What was the key to the Bills' victory over the Chiefs yesterday? That's our Twitter poll. It's been up, and it'll be up for another couple of minutes or so here. The key to a Bills' victory over the Chiefs on Sunday, what do you think it was? Almost half of you say it is handcuffing Kansas City's big playmakers. 47% said that. 23% say the pressure they put on Alex Smith. Chris Brown made an important distinction. It was confusion more than pressure, just the doubt of pressure coming that made a big difference. 22% of you say getting the early 10-point lead made the difference. 9% have something else in mind. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or at Twitter, at John Murphy Show. What do you think? Here's a call from Dave in Buffalo. Go ahead, Dave, you're on the air.
Yeah, I would like to ask a question. If
if it's even at all significant, like strength of schedule. Like, this is week 11, and I know Kansas City, although they're leading their division, that game is really important to them. So, like, there's a new strength of schedule, like, after all of these games have been played through injuries and or whatever diversity teams have been gone through. But I think it should be able to tell better after week 11, like, how things are panning out right now. So is there a significance with the present strength of schedule that might lend a hand to the Bills where it might not be so impossible that they could sweep Miami or who has Kansas City beaten anyway?
You know, Dave, we always get into, you know, the schedule. We were just talking about Baltimore's schedule moving forward, and we always get into that. But to be honest with you, Dave, the strength of schedule is week to week. And we always say this, it's a week to week league. Well, your strength of schedule is week to week, because guess what? The team you're playing this week, they suck. But they might be good next week, but you just got them on a down week, you know, and you end up beating them. Right now, you know, Baltimore's strength of schedule, they play tonight against Houston, who might be down. They might even lose to Houston. You never know. Strength of schedule is just something, I think that's more of a media term and fan term, you know, but it really is week to week.
Especially when you look back at, you know, last year, and you can only do that like maybe once, one quick look at your, you know, comparing last year's schedules, but Dave asked who the Chiefs beaten. I mean, they beat New England. They put 42 points up on New England in the opener. They beat Philadelphia, arguably two of the best teams in the league right there. They beat them with 27 points. That's who they've beaten, along with a number of others, four others.
You know, and then the Bills beat them. You know, I don't know. It seems like, I guess you're right, because if it could beat New England and Philly and then get beat by the Bills, it's like, where's the parity? I mean, you don't, it's so, it seems like it's completely.
Well, yeah, but as Donald points out, it changes every week. A team's situations change, injuries change. The Chiefs clearly not playing now like the way they were in the first 5 weeks. They went 5-0.
I think I like that. You know, I think that's what I like about the NFL, the fact that it does change every week. The fact that any team can lose on any day. You look at the NBA, you know Golden State, you know Cleveland, even though they're not playing well, you know the teams that are going to be in it at the end. You know going into certain games what teams are going to win that game. If Golden State is playing a certain team, I don't even want to watch that game, you know. But in the NFL, you might not want to watch it. But then you look at it, you know, you're looking at maybe the Sunday ticket, or you're looking at ESPN on your phone or something like that, and oh, man, they're actually losing that game. You know, like you look at the Jacksonville Cardinals game. Nobody would have thought that, you know, that game would even be close the way Jacksonville had been playing. But it is a week-to-week league. Any team can lose any week. Nobody thought that Green Bay would be even anywhere close to Pittsburgh like they were last night, you know. But you just never know what's going to happen. Teams come out, you know, you get certain calls that go against you. You have certain injuries during a course of a game, during the week in practice. You just never know.
We hope to pick up some of the news conference for, I believe, Rick Dennison will go first. Maybe Leslie Frazier will roll with that. And they're coming up at the podium in a couple of minutes. So come on back for that. We are coming to you live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back for a few more minutes here from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming back after Thanksgiving. It was good to have the time off.
It was.
I'm glad to be back, and glad to be back after a win.
It was definitely good to have the time off, get some food, you know.
Yeah, I really needed to get some food. Come on, man.
I don't get home-cooked meals.
Oh, home-cooked, okay.
Yeah, I don't get home-cooked meals, so I had to go home and get me a home-cooked meal.
Okay.
I get those once in a blue moon.
It was good. It's good to be back. Good to come back after a win. Tomorrow's show looks pretty good, too. Trey Wingo is going to join us tomorrow. Steve Tasker with his regular Tuesday visit. And we're hoping to get Eddie Yarbrough in here to talk about his second NFL start. Rick Dennison, the Bills' offensive coordinator, is at the podium to answer questions about yesterday's game. Let's listen in.
Guys, reset the line of scrimmage pretty effectively.
Yeah, they did a good job. You know, there's a few things, obviously, when you come out of a game. You want to see some we need to sharpen up some techniques, but they did a good job. You know, using a lot of different schemes early and had to switch. They were running through some gaps. We had to change some things up. But I think they did a great job adjusting. And battled them in pro, pass pro, kept them off. Tyrod, the couple of we went down three times, but I think they could have been avoided.
Coach, was there a thought at all in the last drive of maybe being a little bit more aggressive, or was it the plan just, hey, we need them to use their timeouts? So
we wanted to get a first down, but they had three timeouts. So in the field position we had, we knew with the job that Danny and the special teams were doing pinning them, that would be advantageous for us. So the biggest thing was using the timeouts, but obviously we're trying to get a first down. We didn't execute to make a yardage. You know, perfect world, they use their timeouts and we get a first down and we get to victory before that.
What do you think of Tyrod's decision making? It looked like he was pretty judicious in when he decided to use his feet, but the times that he did looked to be the right times.
Yeah, he did. I think just going through it, he made a couple of things that we'll correct. You know, we'll smooth that out. Like I said, I think we could have avoided a sack or two with that. But I think overall he did a good job, you know, with that group, trying to attack where we planned going into it.
Do you feel like Charles is getting back to a point of maybe where he was pre-injury? I mean, he had a quiet 4 receptions for 60 yards, but they were pretty instrumental.
Yeah, I think he did a good job with the matchup, and that's where we're trying to get him isolated in a couple things with the routes that he did. And he played fast. I think he's getting close, but, you know, I'm no expert. I just know he was open and he made some plays.
What progress did you see from the offense under Tyrod yesterday as opposed to when the team was struggling and led him to be benched?
Well, I don't know. I just know we executed better yesterday. I think we were in sync. And we played complementary football. Our defense played very well. Special teams did a great job. And we were just trying to do our part. So I think we just executed better.
How much more room for improvement is there then?
Oh, there's room. I mean, obviously you go through in and out. We left some plays out in the field. A couple things that we had set up, and we got a little bit different look, and all we needed to do was, you know, just do what we ask them, and we'll get that fixed up. We'll get that corrected. But we did leave some plays on the field, but they're a good team. You know, it's a tough place to play, the noise and the caliber of the defense. They're a good team. We did what we needed to do to win.
Fair enough. The big question mark has always been, I mean, you're facing an opponent in the Patriots who are very prolific on offense. When facing teams in the past few weeks like the Saints that are very good at on offense, do you feel that your offense has enough to at least match what other teams have done in putting points up on the scoreboard?
Well, that's why I'm coaching. I mean, if I didn't think I had a chance, I wouldn't be here. Of course I think I got a chance. I love this team, and I believe in what we're doing. So I'm going to work. I just started watching. They're a tremendous team. You know, it would be a big challenge for us, but, I mean, that's what we're here for, to go out there and win games.
3rd and 1 in the second half, you had Tyrod take a sack, and then you ran a pitch to Sean that was stopped. What went into both of those play calls?
What was that?
3rd and 1 in the second half.
I heard that part, but what was the last part?
What went into those parts?
Well, both of them, we thought first off, we thought we'd get the edge on that. We didn't quite get it done, right? And he's got to make a decision. When we get on the edge, didn't execute that one. The second one, when we flipped it to LaShawn, again, execution wasn't quite sharp. Snapped it a little soon and just didn't get it done. So we got to go back and make sure we get those done. Those are manageable. Those are things that we should be doing right.
Is it oversimplifying things to say you've got Richie Incognito, Eric Wood? Can't you just line up behind those guys and try to get a yard that way?
Well, I think we went through our study. Between the nine coaches we had, that's what we decided to do.
Rick Dennison answering questions. Donald, what's it like, and you've been in this position, I would think. You come off a win that no one anticipated you would get. And look, everybody has the right to ask questions, but to get peppered with questions about why didn't you do this, why didn't you do that, how come this happened? You know what I mean? It's in the back of your mind, and look, again, everybody has the right to ask questions, but it's got to be like, Did you see what just happened here yesterday? We went out and beat the Chiefs, and no one gave us a chance to win.
Like coordinators and coaches get those questions a lot more. Players don't get it as much, but it's tough when you get peppered or hammered with certain questions, and you're like, where are you coming from with that? Why are you even asking me that question? You know, it is tough to be standing up there, and you don't want to say the wrong thing because then the people upstairs are upset with you, and so you're always trying to say things the right way, and it might make things a little bit uncomfortable as you're standing up there trying to speak.
Our Twitter poll today dealt with yesterday's win over the Kansas City Chiefs, and what do you think the biggest factor was in yesterday's win? And in responding to Twitter, 47% of you said the biggest factor was the way the Bills handcuffed Kansas City's playmakers. 22% say pressure on Alex Smith. 22% say the early 10-point lead. 9% say something else. They had something else in mind. Thank you for participating. Tomorrow, Trey Wingo from ESPN joins us. Steve Tasker from the Buffalo Bills joins us. And maybe we get a chance to talk to Eddie Yarbrough tomorrow as well about his start. Donald, we'll be back here tomorrow. Thanks very much.
Let's do it.
We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.